This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets dropped their second preseason game of the season to drop the record to 0-1-1 with a 4-1 loss to the Edmonton Oilers last night at Bell MTS Place. Lots to get to on that. A lot of debuts. A lot of issues. Although it is the preseason, we'll delve into that and also tee up an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets now head to Minnesota and we'll play the Wild right here on TSN 1290 tonight. Afternoon ride, we'll get started at 3 with Husser and Rick Ralph and then the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Mr. Kevin Olszewski and friends at 6, Jets and Wild with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns at 7 o'clock tonight, and then the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets postgame show right here on TSN 1290. The Winnipeg Goldeyes go back-to-back after an epic Game 4 that forced 17 innings in order to get to a Game 5 and a weather delay. They are back-to-back champions in the American Association, 18-2. We'll delve into that. We'll hear from Skip Rick Forney. Jamal Westerman spoke with the media yesterday about his season being over. NFL Week 3 starts tonight. Ed Tate's going to join us. Dennis Bayak is. Jeff Reinbold. David Pagnotta. And, of course, two more chances for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas and an hour of your phone calls on everything I just bestowed onto you. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Good, man. Crazy night last night. Lots of wonderful and horrible things in the sports world, but we'll get on to it all. Right? Like the baseball incident in New York, the Yankees. Oh. That whole netting thing. If you don't think there should be netting up at ballparks down the line, you're a freaking idiot. That's all there is to it. I can't believe the debate and people blaming the parent. But I mean, we'll get into that at some point in time, but just horrible thing happened there. And then the Goldeyes, the situation, I saw a great pick of Forney and Collier standing back-to-back. Like, just wonderful. And don't forget how they got into this final, right? With the consecutive walked bases loaded, a couple of walks that allowed them, for them to go. Like, they had to squeak their way into the final. And then the amount of drama and to win it in the fashion that they did, like, just what a celebration that would have been for everyone at the ballpark yesterday.
I pulled a little double duty yesterday, left the Jets to go to the Goldeyes, get some postgame, and it's the first, I haven't covered a lot of championships in all sports, but the ones I've seen, it's the first time players and coaches and everything were saying, well, Game 4 was the game of the series. Like, usually it's the deciding game, it's fifth game, it's do or die, and they're just saying Game 4 was the deciding factor. We'll hear from Rick Forney. Outstanding job by the Goldeyes, 18-2. What a year. Like, back in, what was it, July against Kansas City, they call it the best independent baseball game in the history of independent baseball against Kansas City. The 14 innings, all that stuff. And then now the game against them. Congratulations to Andrew Collier, Rick Forney, Tom Vaith, everybody involved with the Winnipeg Goldeyes. Jets lose 4-1 to the Edmonton Oilers last night. And obviously I saw the first period and part of the second, and then I was over at the Goldeyes. So I caught the rest of the highlights. I listened to some of the post-game show. Before we get into individuals, to me, there is this eerie feeling about a lot of the same issues with this team. And I know it's preseason, and I know that's why they're dressing veterans and everything else. But what was your impression of the game?
Well, it was like watching two different games in a lot of ways, right? The first to second period. The first period, the Jets were outrageous and completely dominant. Shots directed towards the net, I think 23-9. It was just, they were fantastic and hitting iron all over the place. And five times they hit the pipe last night, but that first period, they were spectacular. And then they came out and just absolutely were taking a nap in the second period. It was completely a 180 shift. And the third was better than the second. But at that point, Edmonton just kind of sitting back, and the Jets not able to generate a whole pile, a couple more bars and all the rest of it. But basically, that second was the mystery last night. And if you're thinking this team's going to be that much more consistent and smooth sailing this year, that second period's got to be of concern. And I thought Dustin Byfuglien had a real rough and ugly night last night.
Yeah. You know, Jim, you kind of said the mantra that I'm trying to repeat in my head here over and over again. it's just preseason. It's just like I'm just like almost like it's some sort of like a comforting, you know, line that you keep saying over and over in your head, because it was disheartening to watch. And I'm just I'll be honest, I'm just kind of struggling to decipher how much meaning I should put into that, because like you said, you put on that game and you could say that was a 2015 loss, a 2016 loss, a 2013 loss. There was just a lot of ugliness in that game, and yeah, you're right, Troy Bufflin was not very good at all. But to Buff's credit, Nikolai Ehlers was good, and the top line was all right. And then after that, I don't know, like who had a good game after that? Trouba as well, maybe. But like the good performances were kind of few and far between from the team last night. The one thing that is really starting to bother me though, and I'm not even going to put the it's just preseason tag on it. This penalty kill's awful. It's just terrible. And we've watched Minnesota come in here. We've watched Edmonton come in here now. And both of those penalty kills have been crazy aggressive. And they get on the puck carrier, and they don't allow you a whole lot of time to make decisions. And they do what a penalty kill should do. And that's make you, force you into a quick decision. Don't give you a lot of time to survey and look at your options. And just kind of narrow you into making the simple play. When the Jets go on the penalty kill, they sag back, and there's just no pressure. And opposing teams have all day to try and figure out what they're going to do, and it's just not working. It didn't work last year or the year before that, and it's not going to work again this year if that's the kind of penalty kill that they throw out there. Because, look, when you talk about successful penalty kills in hockey, do you ever watch a game and afterwards go, man, the way that they just kind of sagged back there really gave the team no options.
It's hard to believe that's what they're like, that's going to be what they do during the regular season, right? But you would think that they'd be practicing
exactly
what they're doing right now for the regular season. It is so ridiculously passive and tight, the box. It's hard to believe. It's hard to accept that that's actually what their plan is, Wicks.
Yeah, to me, like, again, it's fascinating because, you know, a week and a half from now, the season could start and it could look better and we could be sitting here going, remember all that like you do. But I understand the fever around some of the same issues. Now, I didn't think the penalty kill, the power play, everything would look phenomenal in the second game of the preseason and the second game in 3 days with, you know, the different lineups in there. But I get the fever of a lot of things look the same, like a lot of things that plague this team.
And people, I was asking all offseason, what's the pixie dust? Right? People were saying this and that and this is going to happen. Well, how? You got the same people involved.
Well, the pixie dust to me is you eventually get better. You learn from your mistakes and you execute better. And maybe this is when it happens. You have two games like this. There's some coaching going on. Maybe there's some changes in personnel. Maybe when the whole lineup's together and it goes better, but
with the penalty kill, though, JT, it's not personnel, right? We're talking I don't know if they're not showing their cards. If this is like, you know, football when you run your vanilla defense and offense, so. You don't want to show anybody
anything.
That's the
other thing I was
going
to
suggest. Other teams aren't doing that.
Yeah,
like why wouldn't you be practicing your structure here instead of whatever in the world that ridiculously passive thing is that they're doing on their PK. It's remarkable. And the contrast it's outrageous between the two, between both opponents so far this year. It's ridiculous, the contrast in the penalty kills.
And you know what? If the Jets, say the same thing happens in the game where Edmonton, I can't remember how many power play goals they scored, but let's say they scored two or three last night.
It was 2-for-4.
Okay, so let's say they scored two goals on the power play last night. But the Jets are aggressive, and they're going after guys on the puck. And you know what? Maybe you just don't have it down yet. And they work it around quickly, and they get a couple goals. Like I think most people would be somewhat okay with that, knowing, look, they're trying something out new. It's something completely foreign to what they did the previous season. But at least the process is kind of trending in the right direction. That's not the case, though. They're just so far back away from the puck at all times, and no matter how talented and smart you are as a player in your own zone, 5-on-4 like that, and it doesn't even have to be elite NHL players, but just good, smart hockey players, You give them a man advantage like that, eventually they're going to break you down. Like that's just the fact. They're at some point they're going to find somebody open. And the Oilers made a couple nice plays and some backdoor tap-ins. That's what's going to happen when you don't apply pressure on the penalty kill. You're not going to survive for very long. And it's just been really disheartening that they haven't attempted to be at least a little more aggressive. If they do it in game one, I'll have a mea culpa. Then I'll say I was wrong. But
you'll see it again tonight with Minnesota. Minnesota's super aggressive. Yeah. You'll see
and
the difference.
Where was their penalty kill last year?
Eighth or something like that.
Yeah.
So how concerned are you after two preseason games? Like, is this – are we talking just, well, this is alarming? This is something to keep an eye on? We'll see how the rest of camp goes? Or I don't have a lot of faith in this.
Knocking on the door of alarming, for sure. And I'm right there. I hear you guys with the whole – and this is what losers do in preseason. It's preseason. Think of those horrible years with the Bombers in preseason, you know, losing 42-0 and all that crap. That's what everybody – that's what players, fans, coaches say all the time in preseason. But very, very often there is a resemblance of preseason to regular season.
Well, and that's one thing I'll give credit to. I didn't hear anything from the players about it's preseason. In fact, from the post-game, Josh Morrissey literally saying, like, and Tyler Myers touched on it. And, I mean, Josh Morrissey in the postgame to me was bang on when he said, I felt we stuck to the outside way too much. I didn't think we drove it a lot. I thought we took a lot of stuff off that even though it's preseason, we don't think that way. This is a game. The lights come on. The puck drops. We want to be better at all aspects of the game. And he said we just weren't tonight.
He's right.
That's what I mean. I thought it was very – like, I didn't hear a lot of, oh, we want to tweak some things and things didn't go well and blah, blah. I heard a lot of, that's not good enough, and we know that.
And that was with at least half of their top team. Like, that's the crazy thing, right? Edmonton didn't have much here. Minnie didn't have much here. And the Jets are out there, a solid half of them, And hey, man, it could have been a much different game from a scoreboard when you're talking about hitting post the way they did. That was outrageous. It was like a symphony in there last night. So you know, it very easily could have been 4-1 or something like that in that, or 4-0 after that first period sort of thing. But when you're talking specifically about the special teams and just how remarkable things look, it's all alone with that penalty kill, an aspect of the team that has to improve dramatically. It's just, it's weird what they're doing out there. It's so bizarre that it just doesn't make sense. I don't understand what they're trying to accomplish. It's so weird.
Who stood out for you last night, good or bad? There was a lot of storylines. Nick Petan was in the lineup. Sammy Niku, I thought, had a real rough night, as did Dustin Byfuglien. What did you think of Steve Mason? Tyler Myers played again.
Mason looked real good, I thought, real solid. It just kind of doesn't – for me, I wondered if people who were hoping the Jets do well or win, why he just made me feel good. You know, he looked good back there. Even on the goals, there was nothing he could have done on the first couple of goals for sure and some of the backdoor crap that was going on. But I just thought that he looked real sound and solid out there, confident. But, yeah, and who stood out? Like, there wasn't a whole lot that stood out in a positive manner. The team looked so like, it was the weirdest thing. The team was so dominant in that first period. It just looked spectacular. Like, this is going to be a three-period spank session, more or less. The Jets are just going to impose their will and take it to them. And then the relax and the shift in the second period was like they literally fell asleep and someone needed to shake them to wake them up. And they kind of woke up in the last couple of minutes of the second, but were never really able to get back to the place where they were in that first period. So who stood out in a real positive manner? I'm going to have to search for a little bit. I mean, there was a time in the second when Myers kind of looked like Mark Stewart trying to get out of his zone. And for sure, Dustin Byfuglien struggled. Like, he was the guy that stood out the most to me. 23 minutes out there, zero hits, two giveaways. He played a 2-on-1 horribly that allowed a pass on an angle that you never in a million years should allow a pass. You got to give Mason the shooter and let him know that the pass isn't going to happen. But, yeah, it was just real frustrating.
Had his stick blocking nobody. Like, the shooter was behind him, and you're right, he played it horribly. But to be fair, Sammy Niku makes a terrible turnover in the neutral zone, trying to get a little fancy and not just chipping it to the boards to the winger there. I thought Sammy Niku looked like a defenseman who has not spent any time on the North American ice and struggled to realize that you don't get 5 seconds with the puck. You know what I mean? So maybe he gets a bit better as the and that look. That's a kid that's going to need AHL time. He needs to get used to the rink because as a defenseman in European hockey, you have all day to make plays. You don't have guys forechecking aggressively because the rink's too big. You'll tire yourself out. So hopefully he kind of figures that out a bit quicker. But who stood out positively? I thought Nick Ehlers was really good. I thought he was probably the best skater the Jets had. He had the goal, but hell of a rush in the third period with a toe drag on a guy in the Jets zone and dangles his way through three or more people. I thought he looked real strong, but other than that, Mason came as advertised. It's just unfortunate that they kind of revealed his weakness, which is backdoor tap-ins.
We got to break, guys. We got to go, but we'll delve more into this game and set up tonight's game between the Jets and the Wild, and of course, let you weigh in at 9 o'clock on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Wild. And up next, we'll hear from Rick Forney of the back-to-back champion Winnipeg Goldeyes on the Big Show TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Clay Oven, TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. And your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show. And the Winnipeg Goldeyes have won back-to-back American Association titles. Very tough to do in any sport. I would imagine even tougher in independent baseball. They played Game 5 last night at Shaw Park. Had a 9-0 lead after the second inning. 15-2 after four innings. And they go on to an 18-2 victory. You had to wonder what each team would have after 17 innings in Game 4. Forcing extras in the bottom of the ninth on Monday night. With two outs and down to their last strike, the Winnipeg Goldeyes pull off the rare feat of winning back-to-back championships. Here's manager Rick Forney just after winning his second straight championship.
Best team doesn't always win these, but I can honestly say the best team in 2017 won the championship this year.
History will record it as a blowout, but you know better. How would you describe this series and the craziness of it?
Unbelievable. I mean, just... who'd have thought today would have been like this offensively? You know, middle of our lineup been scuffling a little bit, but you know, they're pretty good at staying in the moment, moving on to the next day, and they did. The middle of the lineup was just unbelievable today.
Do you have any inkling, or when did you think your team was going to be ready with the bats and everything?
I wasn't worried about them. They hit all season long. I mean, when people pitch well, you're not going to score a bunch of runs. They pitched well, but we waited our time and forced the fifth game, and we were ready.
Anything in the middle of that order to wake them up?
I don't say anything to those guys. The worst thing you can do is say something to them. Just run them out there and let them know you trust them and stay out of their way.
You once said it's harder to manage a great team than it is a weaker team that fights all the time. How hard was this season, or was it hard?
It wasn't, to be honest with you. This team was a joy to be around. Maybe the best Goldeyes team ever. I mean, we from start to finish, we had a talented group, and they just played really high-level baseball all season long. We weren't without our bumps and bruises, but they did it, man.
That Kansas City game earlier in the year that was called the greatest independent game ever, that help you at all after Game 4 and what you've been through?
So many games to look back over the course of the season, you can say it's a turning point, but the greatest game of the year was Game 4 in this series, baby.
Where does this sit with you now?
I don't know. It hasn't sunk in yet. I'm certainly not taking it for granted. I know how hard this is to do, and I'm just really proud of my guys. I was just fortunate to land some really good people and put a quality team on the field again that put us back in this situation.
This scene versus 2012, 2016, how would this compare in your eyes?
2012, we didn't have any business being in the finals, much less winning. We were probably the fourth best team heading in, but we just got hot at the right time. 13 we were pretty good, or last year we were pretty good, and we played well at the right time. But this year, no doubt in my mind, this is the best team we've had in a long time. I told them this in a meeting. We were scuffling a little bit, and we lost a big game. I walked in the clubhouse, and you could have heard a pin drop. And I'm glad that they, you know, don't take winning or losing so well that they were quiet. But I went in there and let them know, you know, I believe in you guys, and you're the best team in the league. Some of them looked at me like I was speaking Chinese. I don't think they believed it, but I believed it. And just let them go out there and play, keep writing their names in the lineup, and they did it.
Winnipeg Gold Eyes manager Rick Forney. Also last night, Sean Pleffner, first baseman, hit for the cycle in a championship game. They take the final 18-2. We'll discuss this and get into the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and Jamal Westerman when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter right now at TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, going to delve into much more of the Jets and the Oilers preseason game last night. 4-1 victory for Edmonton. Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day tonight as a different lineup. We'll go to Minnesota this morning and take on the Wild this evening. Full pre- and post-game coverage right here on TSN 1290. And Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns will have the call at 7. Right now we're going to delve into the Bombers, but before we do so and hear from Jamal Westerman, who is out for the rest of the season and addressed the media yesterday, gentlemen, we heard from Gold Eyes manager Rick Forney. 18-2 in Game 5. They win back-to-back titles in independent baseball. And Rick says this is the best team he has ever managed in his career. And they really just said found a way when it came down to it. What a great season for them and back-to-back titles in independent baseball.
Yeah, right out of the gate, pretty much, that we were hearing out of the Gold Eyes camp that this is one of the best teams, maybe the best team they've ever put together. And then they sort of complement that by having the best record in the American Association during the regular season with a .620 win percentage. And just crank it up, and like he was, like Forney saying there, like Skip was saying there, it's quite often we see in pro sports where the best team arguably doesn't win. But they're able to pull it off, and with some just remarkable dramatics, whether it's getting into the series and then, of course, the monumental sort of thing that unfolded here in Game 4. And you wonder, with that offensive explosion, you always wonder some of the inner workings, right? Both these teams get the additional day off, but just with how alive the bats, like, did they just happen to hit a jackpot or sort of win the lottery and their bats being so magical yesterday, or were there other things that came into play that gave them a considerable edge in Game 5? It was fantastic. It was hard for me to believe, following the game on Twitter and watching the Jets game, and it was hard for me to accept it was real, right? It was almost like the numbers were somehow fake or something like that. But just to get up by that much, I've been in big games where, and probably all of us that have played sports have been in big games where you get a lead, where it's insurmountable, and you're celebrating basically halfway through the game. You're keeping your head about you, but you know damn well there's no chance in HE double toothpicks that you can lose, and that must have been what it was like for the Gold Eyes yesterday. Certainly that would have been the experience of watching the Gold Eyes play in the ballpark.
Like, awesome. It's the biggest battle in the world. Like, I gotta stay focused. Yeah. Like, because you don't want to, especially like with the Falcons, right? Like, you don't want to, like, don't choke this league, please.
How dare you bring
but
up the Falcons?
I gotta
again.
Say something about the Gold Eyes and people talk in Winnipeg. Not everyone, but there's a lot of people. When we talk about the Bombers and even the Jets, man, it would be nice to end the championship drought for the city. There's no championship drought for the city, because the Gold Eyes rake him in like nobody's business. There's a football drought, there's a hockey drought, but there's no championship drought. Because it's pretty wild, but the Gold Eyes are how successful they've been basically my entire life. Like, I just the Goldeyes making the playoffs to me is basically something that you just almost take for granted.
And
but
you know
that's
what?
How good they've been.
In the middle of the afternoon yesterday, there was about 5,400 tickets sold. And Rick Forney mentioned that last night when I was in the scrum. He said, you know, these fans in this city, and I said, what's it like to win in this city? And he's like, well, look at this crowd right now. He said, there's a, and Reggie Abercrombie mentioned that in his scrum. There's a Jets game tonight. We get it. It's sort of, you knew when the Jets came back and the Bombers got a new stadium that there's a fight for dollars here in this city. And the Goldeyes were doing, you know, do their best to sort of still provide entertainment, still provide great teams, and win championships. And I felt last night that, like Rick Forney said, he goes, this is like it was back in the day when there were 7,500 people here a night, and this crowd and everything else. Like, they understand that there's more than one thing in town, and they're so appreciative of the fan support they get. And they're really a top-run organization. Yeah. They continue to put a good product on the field. They continue to put an outstanding product off the field in Shar Park and everything they do in the city. And I agree with you, Brandon. Like, we talk about championship droughts. There is a football drought and a hockey drought, but there is not a championship drought. The Winnipeg Goldeyes, whether they win the title or not, are very competitive year in and year out. And I liked what Rick Forney said about that, because we talked about this prior, and Troy, you mentioned it as well, that I've seen this league and the Northern League where the best team rarely wins a championship. With 100 games in 110 days, when those playoffs start, you got to be hot. And he mentioned that last night. In 2012, we had no business winning the championship. We just got really hot at the right 2 weeks of the season. And this year, they just had a really good team. Guys want to play here, and they built another successful one. So congratulations to the Winnipeg Goldeyes back-to-back championships. We'll get your thoughts on the Goldeyes and their championships on the Boss Pizza fan line as well. This is the Big Show, TSN 1290. Let's get into the Bombers now. They host the Red Blacks. They're 8-3. Tomorrow night, Investors Group Field will have tickets to give away for you. Coming up in this program today to get you to IGF. But Jamal Westerman spoke to the media yesterday. He's having his best season since signing with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but he will be out for the rest of the year. Here's Jamal Westerman.
It's disappointing, devastating, honestly, you know, just not being out, you know, to go out there with your teammates and perform and to compete and, you know, to go out there on the field and, you know, make plays with the guys. But this is kind of one of those things, you know, when it comes to football that, you know, things happen. I think I'd be a little bit more disappointed if, say, I wasn't prepared or say I didn't work out or say I didn't, you know, take my training or I wasn't lifting weights or doing the things to keep my body healthy. But, you know, I was doing all the things, just kind of a freak accident kind of happens and, you know, just got to kind of roll with it.
I'm trying to go back into my memory bank of weird or freaky things that I saw that led to injury, and especially taking into consideration that he was seen at practice or on the side of the field jumping up and down and waving his arms, and none of which you would do if you had anything that was shoulder, pec, neck, concussion, like any of those things that come into play. Anything you can imagine that would relate to an upper body, you're not going to be moving and bouncing around like that. So it's an absolute mystery what's wrong with him. I guess we just have to accept it and move forward. But I do think the Bombers would be okay. But a real for him to be calling it a freak accident and to see what he was doing or to know what he was doing on the sideline and stuff as reported by Darren Balming, and it's just bizarre. The whole thing adds up to bizarre.
It's one of the weirder injury situations I can remember, and maybe you guys can help me out with this, but what do the Bombers gain from not disclosing what, like, if he's truly out for the season and he's not coming back this year? Like, generally when players go out for the year in any sport, they reveal whatever the injury is, because you're not gaining any sort of a competitive advantage at this point. So the fact that they're being so secretive about this and not really revealing any kind of information, like, it just feels like there's something fishy going on. I don't know what that means. I don't know if, like, did the injury happen outside of the game or what's going on. But like Troy said there, generally upper body injuries, you try not to jump up and down and create plenty of upper body movement if you have an ailment like that. And it doesn't matter, right? Like, even the back, if your back hurts, you're not you're not even thinking about jumping anywhere. So it's just it's such a bizarre situation, and I'm curious why the Bombers are going to such lengths to keep everything under wraps right now.
Well, and to your point, like, being a Bears fan, there's two linebackers, Freeman the first week, Kiedewski the second week, pectoral, done for the year. tore his pectoral muscle, did this, did that, done for the year, like in week two. So it's it. We're going to hear an exchange with Darren Bomming here at Jamal Westerman, too, on if the season is the whole season. Does it include playoffs, everything else? But here's Jamal Westerman on the decision to sit out the rest of the regular season, at least.
You know, I talked with Al yesterday. We were getting some things back from, you know, different doctors and, you know, doing different things yesterday. And after talking to Al and, you know, the specialist, and, you know, we decided to, you know, that it wasn't a benefit for anybody for me to, you know, to continue to play and, you know, to go out there and, you know, possibly, you know, make things worse or different things like that. And, you know, there's always you kind of fighting where it can you play, then what level can you play at? You know, that becomes a thing also.
And Westerman goes into his replacements on the D-line and how he thinks the team will do in part of his role now.
I think it's great, man. I think we have a lot of good guys. We had, you know, you got Shayon on practice squad, too, that if something happens, he definitely can come up. So I think it's, and I don't think there's going to be any drop-off or anything like that, because I think, you know, throughout this year, too, you know, we had guys injured. Tristan was down a lot of games, and Jeff Coat came and stepped up, and we've seen guys that are ready to go in practice when a guy may be down or a guy may be taking a day. So I don't think that's going to be a problem at all with the group that we have.
I truly believe that's true as well. There's not going to be a drop-off here at all.
We talked about that yesterday and some of the guys that will be taking his spot. Now, here's the exchange with Darren Bomming and the rest of the media on if he is out for just the regular season, the whole year. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, whenever that may be. Here's Darren Bomming with Jamal Westerman.
People are asking if season ending means postseason.
Oh, right. It's just season. There is a postseason.
Are you done for 2017?
Oh, just for the season. It's season ended, so just the season.
Are you done for 2017?
I'm done for the season, 2017.
It's just stupid. I mean, yippee, secret. Who cares? Like, I just don't. What do you? I don't get that. I'm there with you guys. I normally, you know, why you can't answer that question is stupid.
Well, it leads to speculation, so let's speculate. Is it concussion?
How can you speculate concussion? If he's got a concussion and there's symptoms and things like that, he's not on the sidelines jumping around 2-3 days ago. If you're having symptoms of concussions, you're not doing that, man. And also on top of that, you're not out this that long for the concussion. No one speculate. You're not going to say the team's not going to come out saying he's out for the rest of the season with a concussion.
Well, he could have how many? And he could have this one, and they go, this is what it could be. And he's making the decision to go, you know what? I just don't want to risk getting another one this year. So,
I think if you have a concussion, you wouldn't be spending any time near the field. Just because of any kind of freak thing that can, like the kicker or the punter hits a ball, shanks it, and it, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that could go wrong. I honestly don't know. And there's, what, 7 games left in the season? So you're talking about an injury that'll keep him out for at least 7 weeks, probably longer than that. I have absolutely no idea. I have no clue what's going on there. And it the fact that he was seen jumping around and stuff like that, if you guys could think of a body part that an injury keeps you out of 7 weeks but allows you to jump around and move your arms and wave them and stuff like that, then let me know. I don't know. This whole thing is just, like Troy said, I think the perfect word is bizarre. It's just, it's something you don't see in professional sports.
All right. Well, Jamal Westerman is out for the season, and he spoke with the media there. They play the Ottawa Red Blacks on Friday night, and we have a pair of tickets to give you to that game, 780-1290. 780-1290, the 12th caller through, will get tickets to see the Bombers and the Red Blacks. And Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game days tomorrow as well on Friday night, and that'll get started at 5:30. And Darren Bomming, Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby will tee it all up for you, and of course, halftime and postgame as well. 780-1290 will get you to the Bombers and the Red Blacks tomorrow night at IGF. Up next, we'll delve into the NFL and some baseball as well. And as Troy mentioned earlier in the show, netting at Major League Baseball parks. Next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity.
September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And week three in the NFL starts tonight right here on TSN 1290. No, not tonight. We have the Jets game on Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. So we're actually going to save you from listening to the San Francisco 49ers and the Los Angeles. Of course, I'm kidding. We do have preseason hockey on. But who do you guys like in that game? We'll talk more about it with Jeff Reinbold at 8 o'clock. But who do you like tonight? I got the Rams. And I got them beating the spread. And I haven't been good at that.
What's the spread?
2.5 for the Rams. So they got to win by 3.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't say that I have any interest in the game tonight in picking it. I don't know. What's the over-under? I'd probably go under.
Take the under? That's where, yeah. I mean, we talked about this, I think, off-air earlier this week. But you're in NFL headquarters making up the schedule. And, look, sometimes you don't know which teams are going to be good and that sort of thing. But you're telling me that the league office thought, you know what would be a good idea in week three? To get the Rams and 49ers head-to-head in a primetime night matchup. Like, isn't it just mind-boggling that these guys that make millions and millions of dollars consistently put out the crappiest possible matchups basically every single Thursday night?
Well, I'm convinced they think the opposite. They like, what's the worst game going to be? Everyone's going to watch it because it's the only game. So let's put it on Thursday night.
Well, that is crazy. That's the marketing premise.
Who would watch this game on Sunday? Well, less people than will on Thursday,
yeah,
because it's the
damaging.
Only game.
You're committing murder on your brand. If that's if your take is their take, that's committing suicide with your brand.
That's the only reason I think they're doing it. Because if this game was on a Sunday with a full slate, nobody would watch it. Now, are there going to be a ton of people? No, but there'll be more than would on Sunday with other games on, I think. I think that's what their scheduling is.
I think we should start a pool as to when the NFL bails on Thursday nights. I think it's going to happen. They can't be this dumb and continue to hurt their brand. They just can't.
You'd think, but I wouldn't put it past them. Because this idea makes no sense on paper, right? Like, the games are all, like, the quality of the games are awful.
Well,
the matchups aren't very
expand,
good, and the ratings are terrible.
Yeah, right now, right? But and Mark Cuban was saying how they're trying to basically own another night of the week and
take
all the rest
Friday
of it.
Night. I don't get that.
No,
take,
they won't do that because the high school, that's an impossibility.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturday.
Saturday's
the
college.
NFL, if I'm the NFL, I'm not too scared about high school.
Everybody's like at or watching high school
half,
games away.
That's half your viewing audience. Yeah. The high school kids, the families that support.
Well, then
the,
if you can't beat high school football,
no, brother. But I
no
did,
no
I think
no.
Because
I don't
you're
think
Canadian
so.
And you don't like. I was down there, man. I saw what in little tiny Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I saw what high school football is and was down there, man. And it's just take that and times it by
well,
four or
it's
ten.
Not about,
in
it's not about
states.
Beating high school football. It's about maximizing your audience. And half the people that watch NFL are the families and the players
and
the
about
people about on
night.
That yeah. take in Friday night football.
I'm not hey, the big bad NFL can't beat 17-year-olds, then get the hell out of Thursday Friday night. What are you like what, honestly? Seriously?
Well, I think they can beat them, but like, they're just nullifying half their audience by not being available on a night when the football fan is busy.
It's an unthinkable notion for sure.
Not buying it. I've seen Friday night I've seen Friday night lights. I know what Lubbock, Texas is like on a Friday. Come on. You're not going to. I'm not buying
okay,
it for one
second.
Okay,
so the Houston Texans are playing Friday night. How many Texans are watching the Texans in Houston or around that
so
area?
So many Texans.
There's a lot of tricky language.
Yeah. When they're in Waco and they're Lubbock and everywhere else playing high school football.
It ain't going to happen.
Like every player in that game on Friday night will be sitting on the couch watching NFL on Sunday if you're a high school player, not to mention their parents, their families.
I think it's real important for all companies. When you're doing well and the money's rolling in and it's like a disease for companies when you're making money, you're expanding, they're always trying to devour more and more and more. At some point in time, I think it takes a real intelligent approach to understanding your place in the market when you can come to an understanding that reaching a plateau and maintaining a certain product level is really important in serving your clients at the highest level possible. The NFL right now is failing to do so. Their numbers are starting to dwindle. They're hurting their product with this every Thursday night. I guarantee you we'll be talking about how, at the very least, how clunky and like lacking organization and hideous execution tonight. It's just, it happens every Thursday night. And at some point in time, they pull the plug.
So I got the Rams beating the spread tonight, you guys.
The only thing I'm looking for is if San Fran gets a touchdown for the first time all season.
And I'm looking forward to be Carlos Hyde, about three of them. Thank you. I wanted to get into this. Juan Carlos Stanton, 56 home runs now. We'll keep one eye on that. The Red Sox got into the playoffs in back-to-back years for the first time since 07 to 09. But a young girl at Yankee Stadium was injured by a 105-mile foul ball off the bat of Todd Frazier during Wednesday's game against Minnesota, leading some players to call for protective netting to be extended to the third base and first base area. Yankee said the girl was taken to hospital for treatment, and New York manager Joe Girardi said he had been told by team security that she was okay. However, Todd Frazier crouched on his hands over his face. The third baseman bowed his head, walked away from the plate, crouched again, and rested his head on the end of his bat. Quote, "I thought of my kids. I have two kids under 3 years old, and I just hope she's all right. I know the dad or whoever it was that was with them was trying their hardest, but the ball's coming at 120 miles an hour at them, and the ball's hooking. So it's like if you've never seen a ball like that, which most people in the world haven't, it's very tough to protect your child." He's just devastated about this, as a lot of, you know, a lot of the players are. We got a break here, but I'll get your guys' thoughts on this. It's time for netting around
it
there.
It was time 20 years ago for netting, and 10 years ago. It's ridiculous. There's no argument against it. It shouldn't matter. We were arguing this 6 years ago on the show. It's absolutely ridiculous. People will get used to it. You don't even notice the netting at NHL games anymore, do you? And it's unthinkable to think sitting there without it.
Ed Tate's next, and more thoughts on this when we come back to The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Am I on the Don Vito Roundtable today? I just said the fastest man in Canada is going to be on the show.
Are you talking physical or wit?
Because I gotta go right after this. I don't know if I can hang around and be the fastest man in Canada. No, I'm definitely not talking physical. This is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jets and Wild tonight from Minneapolis with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munn, 7 o'clock. The host of the Don Vito Roundtable, Kevin Oshesky, will have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6. He'll also have the Huron Windows postgame show. And, of course, Rick Ralph and Husser will tee it all up for you on the afternoon ride. Starting at 3 o'clock, this is Royal Sports Power Hour. We're going to hear from Dennis Bayek at the bottom of the hour. We have a chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're going to hear from some of the Jets players after that 4-1 preseason loss to the Edmonton Oilers. Last night, we'll also discuss Joffrey Leupel. But this next segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, a presentation of Olympic Homes, the ready-to-move specialists. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. We ran out of our time in our last segment, but just wanted to get final thoughts on that netting at Major League Baseball parks, and even players are calling for it now. I can't imagine. Look, obviously the girl that was injured last night and the parents and everybody is the main concern. But like Todd Frazier, and he said, "I immediately thought of my own children and stuff." Like how this could affect a guy doing that is unbelievable too. We'll get to that and some other stuff on the show today. But right now, from BlueBombers.com, to help us tee up the Bombers and the Red Blacks, Mr. Ed Tate. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. What's it been like this week off the bye week? How's the team been?
I think pretty focused. You know, I guess you always wonder when a team comes off the break how, you know, they're going to be. They weren't sloppy, that's for sure. Practice is sort of the only, well, the big news of the week is for the season, but feel pretty comfortable. And
you're cutting in and out pretty good, Ed. Your cell's cutting in and out here pretty good.
You guys want to call me on a different number then?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. We'll call you right back.
We'll call you right back, Ed. Ed Tate's going to join us from Landline on BlueBombers.com. And just get your final thoughts, too, on that netting or in Major League Baseball parks. And why is it taking so long?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't – it's just the why is a great question, man. Like, why does someone need to – why does a two-year-old need to get take this devastating injury or someone need to die before you do something? When you can – obviously, at some point in time, something disastrous is going to happen, and now the baseball world is reacting now when it was – it's just ridiculous, man.
Ed Tate's back with us on the Big Show, TSN 1290. And, Ed, just get your thoughts once again on what the team's been like coming off the bye week.
Yeah, they've been pretty focused, have looked really sharp at practice. The big news, of course, is the loss of Jamal Westerman for the rest of the season, which is a pretty big blow to the defensive front. But the reaction we got from everybody yesterday was they've liked what they've seen in Jackson Jeffcoat and the other guys, and they think they can at least weather the storm in that. But it's an interesting week because, the name that's come up quite a bit in the last couple of days is Ryan Lindley, who probably will start for Ottawa tomorrow night, and not a whole lot of people know about him, and so they're not sure how to prepare for him other than just to prepare for what Ottawa has shown offensively in the past and then see what this guy's all about kind of on the fly tomorrow night.
You would think, Ed, like, I don't really care who it is. When when you got a third-string quarterback who has 14 pass attempts in the CFL to his credit, and that's it, and didn't have success in the NFL when he's down there. So now he's up here in a fresh situation in his first year, an extra man on the field, all the rest of it. The reads are not going to be easy for him. You would think you want to just come at him, make him uncomfortable, and force him into some quick decisions. This is juicy, and the Bombers the Bombers really need to take advantage of the situation and go win this game handily tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the interesting debate about this, isn't it? Because you've got a guy, as you said, Troy, that's thrown 14 passes. He does have some NFL experience, but it's not the same as, kind of live action. So do you change what you do and bring a bunch of pressure? Do you try to confuse him with, different coverages? Or do you just stick with what you've done to get you to 8-3? And I realize there's been a lot of question marks about the defense. I'm with you, though. I think you kind of pin your ears back and go at this guy and see what he's all about. Don't wait to see what he's all about. Make him, force him into mistakes, bring some pressure, different looks, try to confuse the hell out of him and see what he's all about. You're right. Right now, he's kind of slathered in barbecue sauce, and it's time to eat, so go get him.
Ed, how big of a loss is Jamal Westerman?
It's interesting because, if you're around there every day, you see the impact he has on the day-to-day stuff. It's not just what he does on game day. He's the guy that leads the pregame kind of talk and gets everybody fired up before they go out onto the field. But he's just the classic kind of leader by example. It's what he does on a daily basis in terms of being in there first to do the film work and trying to help the other guys. So I think they can kind of weather the storm on the field. I wonder about what impact his, loss might be off the field. Now, he'll be around still, and he still says he's going to come in and do the work and try to help prep those guys for game day, much the same way that Weston Dressler did when he was out. So, that's big on him, and I think some of the younger guys like Trent Corney and Jackson Jeffcoat will appreciate having his voice still in their ear. But, this is something that's going to be hard to measure is the loss of him, particularly off the field.
Jeff Gray, Winnipeg boy, recently got signed on to the Jets practice roster in the NFL. And I believe it's $7,500 a month. Unfortunately, it's a far cry from what you get in the CFL on the practice roster, which I believe is around $750 a month right now. And it's real hard sometimes to keep guys on the PR, and TJ Thorpe just decided to leave, huh?
Yeah, look, Mike O'Shea said that he thought he still had a role for the guy, and TJ Thorpe clearly was unhappy about not being on the active roster. And you can't stop a guy from leaving when he's on the practice roster, and that's essentially what happened. T.J. Thorpe was just tired of sitting and decided to walk out. We all saw what he could do. He's a bigger body receiver that provided them some really decent yak yards after the catch, gave this team some good quality play. But this happens a lot. I think it's unfortunate that he's left, that he's decided to walk away. But it's not the first time, and now it's up to the Bombers to, either make do with what they have or bring in somebody else to fill that spot. There's lots of guys out there that want to play, and we'll take that that money on the practice roster. So, you know, we'll see what happens with T.J. Thorpe down the road. But, you know, it's unfortunate. So now, you know, you've got Damian Washington who started the season. And, you know, a lot of this, if I could kind of take this in a different direction, a lot of this sort of speaks of the team's faith in Timothy Flanders' conversion, basically conversion from a running back to a receiver. He's playing T.J. Thorpe's spot, and they like what he can do, and he's the one that's blocked T.J. Thorpe's path back to the main roster.
Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com joining us today on The Big Show, 13 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. Ed, how far has, and I'll even extend it past this season if you want, but maybe just this season, how far has Matt Nichols come in your mind from the years of you covering this league and seeing guys develop?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. You know, when the Bombers traded to get him, I'll be honest, I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, yeah, okay. I saw him as a number two guy, a guy that had battled all those injuries in Edmonton. And, you know, but in his time here, it's amazing what a vote of confidence, a slap on the back, and sort of the faith of the organization has shown in him, how much he's grown. I mean, you go right back to that game he started in Edmonton last July. It was like a guy almost reborn, and that this is my last chance. I got to run with this, and he's still running. I mean, what he's been able to do and how this team has followed him has been pretty remarkable. That, you know, the statistics are one thing. I didn't think he had this. I didn't know him well enough, but I didn't think he had this kind of leadership ability. It doesn't take much to be walking through that locker room and just be talking to guys for them, not to mention Matt Nichols and how they want to follow this guy. So I think it's pretty remarkable just from my own viewpoint on how he's changed my thinking on him as a quarterback and as a leader.
And just to talk, like, it's pretty neat when you look at the quarterback ranking and the way the CFL uses their QAR ranking now, that Matt Nichols is ahead of the entire field by 5 points. He sits with 89.5. Mike Riley's number two at 84.1. Like, he is the number one rated quarterback in the CFL right now.
Yeah, what's interesting about that now is that I was talking to somebody else in the league, and, you know, we were just talking about his leadership abilities, but they keep saying that one of the things that's really jumping out for them is just how quick he gets rid of the ball. It's his decision-making, how he sees the field, and that QAR ranking, the new ranking, puts a lot of different elements into how they come up with that ranking, and it's about how, you know, how many yards you get on drives and how you protect the ball, and we've seen that since he took over. He's not throwing a lot of interceptions. He makes good decisions, and as we saw in the Banjo Bowl, he's making really good decisions with running the ball. So, I mean, it's hard not to like what you see, and it's been a long time since a Bomber quarterback was at the top of any CFL ranking, isn't it?
Yeah, and we'll see him again tomorrow night as the Red Blacks come to town and take on the Blue Bombers at IGF. Thanks for your time, Ed. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game.
Right on, boys. Take care.
Thanks so much, Ed.
Do we have our winner for the Bomber tickets?
We do.
And it's
Barbara Vogt.
Barbara, congratulations. Nice. On behalf of TSN 1290, you and a guest are off to see the Red Blacks and the Blue Bombers tomorrow night. Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day right here on TSN 1290 begins at 5:30 tomorrow evening. We have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, and we'll hear from some of the Jets after their 4-1 loss to the Oilers last night. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas, and it's your time to qualify. 780-1290, 12th caller through. As we are sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two tickets to the game, return airfare to and from Sin City, baby. Four nights accommodation on the Strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride, or watch for your bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, and our next grand prize draw is Monday, September the 25th. That's this Monday. And then again on October the 9th, October the 23rd, and November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. Last time I was in Vegas, I've got a friend I grew up with in Lethbridge. His name is Steve Ivan. We call him Stick. He's like 6'5 and 100 pounds.
Okay.
Great volleyball player. Looks like Chad Kroeger of Nickelback. Like dead ringer.
Really? Minus the thinness and the
goatee, right, mustache, and the same curly long hair.
Okay.
We go to Vegas with Hustler, and Greg Pshesnik, Liam Mark, a couple of guys.
Questionable circle.
For our 87th birthday. And our friend GP comes up with some Snoop Dogg tickets at the Hard Rock Cafe by the pool. So we're like, Snoop Dogg, let's go. Obviously didn't fit in, but was a great concert. Love Snoop Dogg.
Uh-huh.
But we're walking in, and if you've ever been in Hard Rock in Vegas, there's these short hallways throughout that you got to get to it, and all this memorabilia is up. And we're waiting there for another buddy to come who is staying at a different hotel. And these two ladies are walking in. They're like, do you guys have tickets? We came all the way from Canada for this.
Oh, dear.
And we say, well, we're from Canada. Where are you from? And they're like, from Toronto. We came all the way down. We're in Vegas. We can't get tickets. It's sold out. And I say, why don't you ask Chad Kroeger? And she goes, why would I ask? Or why don't you go to a Nickelback show instead? And she's like, Nickelback? They suck! And I'm like, that's Chad Kroeger. And she turns and looks at my buddy Steve and goes, I was kidding! Chad, can you get us in? Blah, blah, blah. And he, like, being from Lethbridge, and Nickelback's from Hannah, which is about an hour outside of Lethbridge. They played in Lethbridge when they were stuff. She loses her mind. And Steve absolutely detests to this day, he'll go, I had my hair like this before Chad Kroeger was anybody. Like, hates the reference to it. But these two ladies lost their mind because they felt like they just disrespected Nickelback.
So he doesn't use it in his favor.
And not nearly enough for us, his buddies who hang around with him and go like, Chad Kroeger's here.
I think about 9 out of 10 guys, if there was some resemblance, especially in Vegas, would use that.
I was it was a very untapped. Now we're old and he's put on some weight and everything else. But
so he's like the old Morrison or the old Chad Kroeger.
Wasted a good decade. Elvis. From Silver Side up to about 5, just wasted it. Anyway, somebody else is going to Vegas. Nickelback's here tonight. MTS, Bell MTS Place. If you want to check it out, I highly recommend it personally. And they may be in Vegas when you're there as well. Who's our latest qualifier?
Yeah, I don't know if Todd looks like Chad Kroeger or not, but it's Todd Westluck.
Todd Westluck, congratulations, sir. How are you?
Great.
Excellent. You've now qualified for our Hockey Nights in Vegas, courtesy of TSN 1290 and redtag.ca. Have you ever been there?
Actually, no.
Never been to Vegas, Todd?
No.
Life has eluded you that way.
What's that?
Life has eluded you that way, that you never made your way to Las Vegas.
Just somehow just never made my way there.
Awesome. Well, we're going to try and get you there. You're in for the grand prize draw. Do you know who you'd be taking with you to Vegas?
It's kind of funny because, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. I'm trying to enter the contest to win tickets to Vegas, and then the game is November 10th, and I'm kind of thinking or looking at her curling schedule, and it's like, she's going to be gone to PEI for the curling pre-trials. I'm thinking, well, I mean, it's Vegas, right? So not necessarily I have to take my own wife, I guess, but.
Oh, boy.
So I don't know. I guess time will tell, right? You have to win first.
Yeah.
So you're saying, and please, please correct me if I'm wrong, but so you're saying you might have to take somebody else's wife because yours is curling.
Well, you never know, right?
Well, you have to see how it goes. Schedules. It's all about scheduling if you win this trip.
Right. Mine's wide open.
Did she laugh at you when you were trying to qualify, or did she say, go get it?
She didn't actually say anything, so I guess that's a vote of confidence.
Was there an eye roll in this conversation?
I think she was looking the other way when I said it.
Oh, okay. I hope you win now, because at some point she's going to go, you won't come to PEI and support me curling, but you'll go to Vegas.
Todd, we wish you and your wife all the best, and hope she has a great curling season, and best of luck in PEI. You are now qualified for the grand prizes draw, grand prize draws on September 25th, October 9th, 23rd, and November 6th. And just for doing so today, you get a Jets Gear gift card. Congratulations, and thank you for listening to TSN 1290.
Good luck, man. Thanks, guys.
Good luck, man.
The face of the Jets on TSN 3, Mr. Dennis Bayek, joins us on The Big Show. TSN 1290 next.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week us here at TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. You can nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca. to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's show, which we like to do our Subway Sports Star of the Week on Fridays. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show here on TSN 1290. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets in Minnesota tonight, 7 o'clock. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns with the call. And on TSN 3 with the face of the Jets, Mr. Dennis Bayek, who joins us now. Good morning, Dennis.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks.
Excellent. Travel day for you, short turnaround after last night's game. A 4-1 loss to the Edmonton Oilers. How are you chalking this one up? Is it the preseason, or are you, the team's got some stuff to work on?
No, I'm looking at it as preseason. I think I've been through too many preseason games to spend a whole lot of time worrying about what happens in game 2 of 7 in preseason. So there's lots to work on. There's always is at this time of the year. There's new systems, there's new people. And everything else that goes along with that. But they got off to the good start, had enough chances in that first period to maybe put the game away. But, again, you don't look at wins and losses in preseason. You look at individuals. You look at are they grasping the system that we're trying to put into place this year and all those other things. And, you know, they came out in the second period, and Edmonton did a good job of clogging up the middle of the ice, and it seemed to frustrate the Jets a little bit. But, again, having said that, there was enough chances that they certainly could have come out with more than one goal. But give Edmonton some credit. They had a lineup that was very much a defensive-minded lineup, and we're going to see that, I think, a little bit tonight and Saturday with the Winnipeg Jets. It's going to be a different kind of a lineup, I would think, from what the coach has been saying, and we'll see where that goes.
Dennis, the Jets' penalty kill looks remarkably passive right now. They're really collapsing tight and down low, not going after the puck carry, just trying to keep everything on the perimeter. Do you think they're keeping everything real simple in that manner for now during the preseason, or is that the penalty kill that we should expect to see during the regular season?
No, I think we'll see it get a little more aggressive. They haven't spent a lot of time on special teams yet, and the other thing that plays a part in this is you've got new people on the penalty kill. I think they were more aggressive against Minnesota on Monday when you had, some of the people that were here last year. Last thing when you look at it, Sean Mathias missed a bunch of games last year. Matt Hendricks is new. Tyler Myers did some penalty killing last night. He didn't play a whole lot last year. Dmitry Kulikov is new. Steve Mason, your netminder, is new. And I think some of that played a part in the penalty kill last night. I think we're seeing more and more teams around the NHL going to an aggressive penalty kill. Edmonton was aggressive on the penalty kill last night, and we saw it in spurts, and yet it's the down-low coverage as much as anything that, that's going to need some work, and that'll get itself sorted out.
Tyler Myers' first game since last November, almost a full calendar year. I saw him get an assist on the power play, and then he was out there penalty killing. And I just thought to myself, if this whole defensive core is healthy, I'm so interested to see on how the minutes are doled out and who plays on the PK, the power play. And it looks like Tyler Myers could be involved in both.
Well, because he's come in and in such good shape, and he's really looking to get going after only 11 games last year. He wants to get into as much action here as he can. So now you've got the balance with him. You've got a guy who wants to play. And they need reps from him. He needs to touch the puck. He needs to skate in game action. He needs to get back where there's pressure coming at him, NHL pressure coming at him. So he needs all the work that he can get. So now you have to balance that out. Do you want to push him to the point where there's and maybe not a setback from the injuries that he had last year, but just a setback for the simple fact that he hasn't been in game action for so long. So you have to try and balance that out. But he's really looked good. His testing, from what we understand, came in very good. And he certainly has looked good in the drills on the ice. And now it's just a matter of, you know, again, you can't judge his game last night. Even if it was a terrific game, I don't think you can, you know, look at that and say, well, that's the Tyler Myers we're going to see this season. He just needs to get some reps in. He needs to touch the puck. He needs to play.
We saw Nick Petan on the wing last night. In your opinion, if Nick Petan has a future at some point in time with the big club, will it be on the wing?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, simply because of what you look at up the middle. And you know, you've got Mark Scheifele, you've got Brian Little, you've got Adam Lowry, and then you've got a battle going on for that fourth line spot. And I think when all is said and done, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Nick Petan get an opportunity, maybe in a little more offensive role at some point during this training camp. So there's five games left, and we'll see it. So you got Andrew Kopp that's battling for either a wing position or a center position. You got Matt Hendricks that has come in as an unrestricted free agent, who's a centerman. You know, you've got some other players that have been moved around from left wing to right wing. So I think there's a better opportunity, and for Nick Petan with his size, and we've seen it happen with Matthew Perreault, and Coach Paul Maurice touched on this yesterday a little bit. It's an easier game on the wing, and maybe we've seen Matthew Perreault go through some injuries over his time at center, and maybe moving to the wing makes things a little bit easier. But I do think there's a better opportunity for Nick Petan on the wing. You know, simply, I guess, if you want to cut it straight forward, you've got eight wingers and four centermen on your team. So I think there's a better opportunity there.
What was your impression of Steve Mason last night?
I thought he was good. You know what? It's preseason. You've got sloppy games, and you've got plays down low, and with him the same thing. He needs to have some practices and some games more than anything, just some games, and they'll go over video now with the coaching staff, the defense corps, and Mason and the defense corps will now get together. And maybe not after last night's game, but certainly after another game or two, they'll all get together and say, okay, in this situation, where do you want me to go? What do you want to do with the puck? Where are you going to put this rebound? And other things that go along with defensemen and goaltenders having to be on the same page. It's a different for the Winnipeg Jets' current defense corps, because Steve Mason handles the puck probably better than any goaltender we've seen here. So that, you know, that's going to come into play a little bit as well. So you know, there were some of those cross seam passes. I mean, when you look at the goal that got disallowed, if that was the NHL regular season, it probably would have been allowed. So there were some people that were left open down low, and those are areas that the defense corps is going to have to certainly work on. But there'll be some more communication with Mason and the defenseman as time goes on here.
Dennis, some people would like to see considerably more production from Joel Armia. I thought he was a little bit snake bit last year, and there were times that he looked downright brilliant on the ice. Your thoughts and expectations of what you're hopeful for this year for Joel Armia?
Boy, that's a good assessment, Troy, and that's the thing with Joel Armia. There's something there that intrigues you. He's an interesting study from that point. Players that come out of Finland, Patrick Laine is an exception, and there's others who are an exception, but even Patrick Laine's defensive game is good. And Joel Armia is in that situation where their culture and their game training is so you have to be responsible defensively. But he's showing us enough. There's like his ability to steal pucks, his ability to control the puck and do things in tight. And now you want to see the finish, and we've seen it at times. You're right, and I think that the coaching staff and the management would like to see a little more from that line with Joel Armia, Adam Lowry, and Kyle Connors getting the opportunity there right now. So we'll see what happens. I'm guessing that line's going to play tonight in Minnesota. I don't know if they released a lineup yet tonight or not, but I imagine we'll see that line in Minnesota tonight. And maybe even in Edmonton on Saturday. But There's something there. There's something there, and Paul Maurice has touched on this, that he knows more about his players this year than he did last year. The players know more about themselves. His line mates know more about him this year than what they did last year. And there's something there, though. There's something there from an offensive standpoint that I think they want to find out. Is this something that he can be very advantageous and work a real good third line, an offensive third line for the Winnipeg Jets?
Face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of our main voices here on TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak, joining us live on the big show this morning on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290, 42 minutes past the hour. And if you've ever wondered about the power of Dennis Bayak, just as he said that, the lineup came out.
There you go.
In the lineup tonight, Eric Comrie, Tucker Poolman, Mike Scarbosa, Cameron Schilling, Ben Schrott, Jacob Trouba, Andrew Kopp, Buddy Robinson, Matt Hendricks, Adam Lowry, Connor Hellebuck, Joel Armia, J.C. Lapon, Brendan Lemieux, Jamie Phillips, Jack Rossovic, Marco Dano, Nelson Noje, Julian Melchiori, Chase DeLeo, and Kyle Connor will get another game as well. Do you think, is it Eric Comrie's game tonight, Dennis, do you think?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. We saw Comrie and Hellebuck as the combination the other night. And the two goaltenders tonight, just make sure there wasn't three in that list, were Phillips and Comrie.
Phillips is in there too, so.
Okay. Is Hellebuck in there as well?
Yes.
So it may be they'll have to decide between two of the three as to what's happening. I would think Eric Comrie is going to get a game here someplace. Will it be tonight? Will it maybe be in Edmonton, where the Comrie name is certainly very familiar? I'm not sure if coaches, you know, do that or not. I guess time will tell. But I do think Eric Comrie will get a game here. I think you have to give him a game here, and so we'll see what happens from that standpoint. But just you know, from the names you rattle off there, it's kind of what Coach Paul Maurice talked about, was that. You know, some of those guys who are battling for maybe the bottom six positions or whatever, and they'll get the opportunity tonight. And Minnesota's lineup came out yesterday afternoon, and I'll throw this out there right now. It was an interesting afternoon yesterday. We had Minnesota's lineup for tonight ahead of when we had Edmonton's lineup for last night's game. So there's my one vent and my one soapbox for the day, and we'll move on from there. But, yeah, some guys are going to get the opportunity tonight, and they'll get the opportunity again on Saturday.
Dennis, some Jets fans really excited in watching Tucker Poolman play and felt that he looked quite comfortable in Game 1. We'll see him again tonight. Would it be along the lines of shocking if Ben Chiarot wasn't the number 7 D-man this year?
Well, probably not, just because, you know, I think Ben Chiarot has the inside track on that. You know, simply because of the situation with Tucker Poolman, not just the fact that he doesn't have any pro games under his belt, the fact that he went through the surgery in the springtime and that. Now, having said that, he's going to get some games here. There's another guy that we talk about, Tyler Myers. There's another guy that they want to see him. And I think it would not surprise me if, when all was said and done, Tucker Poolman was in 5 of the 7 preseason games. Because, again, he needs to play. He needs to play at this level, and they need to. We talked before about Paul Maurice knowing his players. Tucker Poolman is a new face, and as much as you can look at video, and you know the coaching staff has of all his games last year and probably even the year before, trying to get a handle on what this guy brings, he needs to play at this level. But he's looked good, and that's one of the spots, I guess, that will be considered a competition spot here.
It's going to be an interesting one again tonight, Dennis. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. Travel safe and enjoy the game.
All right, man. We'll talk next week and enjoy the weekend.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
See you guys.
So once again, Eric Comrie, Jamie Phillips, and Connor Hellebuck all on the plane to Minnesota today for the goaltenders. Tucker Poolman's back. Ben Chiarot, Jacob Trouba will play in back-to-back nights. Joel Armia is back in the lineup. J.C. Lapon will get a game. Brendan Lemieux will play again. Jack Rossovic will go back-to-back. Marco Dano is back into the lineup. Nelson Noje. Julian Melchiori will see his first preseason action. Chase DeLeo, Kyle Connor will be back in the lineup as well. Just sort of an interesting mix here with what the Jets are doing so far with this lineup.
Absolutely. Be a lot of young fellas, and it'll be a fun watch tonight.
And we'll have the game as well with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on TSN 1290 and Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. We'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice next in our NHL news and notes and talk about the latest with the Joffrey Leupel situation. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity, your music, your stations, always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Jamie Phillips will be the third goalie, traveling as a third goalie to Minnesota with the Wild or with the Jets tonight to take on the Wild. Eric Comrie and Connor Hellebuck, as of right now, will be the goalies dressed for the game. I would expect to see Eric Comrie get some action tonight as well. Interesting, the Oilers switch goalies at the midway point of the second. Minnesota did it after the second, and both Connor Hellebuck and Steve Mason got 60 minutes in their first two preseason games. Gentlemen, Joffrey Leupel has come out.
Surprise.
Joffrey Leupel released a note on Twitter Wednesday apologizing for earlier social media posts where he appeared to deny any injury after the Toronto Maple Leafs announced he failed his medical this year. Leupel said he would not be seeking a second medical opinion. The deadline for him to do so or file a grievance would have been today at 5 p.m. Eastern, so 4 Central. This is the note he put out yesterday. I responded earlier this week to some negative comments on Instagram. It was an inappropriate response, and I deleted it, but I take full responsibility. It's been extremely tough not being able to play over the past 1.5 years. I will not be seeking a second opinion, but I hope one day to be able to get back on the ice. I apologize to the media, fans, Leafs organization, and most of all my teammates for this unneeded distraction. Sounds like he still wants to play.
Does anybody know what's wrong with him? Or what's allegedly wrong with him?
Isn't it a back?
He had a number of injuries his last season or two with the Leafs, and he had surgery as well. But it's another one of these bizarre injury situations where, I mean, this is different than some others, but you saw Leafs players last year in training camp saying they were excited to get Leupel back into the lineup, and it's not like he was healthy enough last year. But another case where there's something real bizarre going on in Toronto. And I think it was Steve Simmons in one of his pieces that said, you know, the rumor has it that the Leafs have something on Leupel that's keeping him quiet and keeping him away from the rink. And maybe he was reminded of that quickly after he put up that post on Instagram.
Yeah.
There's always lots and lots of secrets behind the closed doors of pro sports, guys.
Always. What? Really?
Interesting here for him to go, you know, I'll just keep my mouth shut and make my money and see what I can do after this contract.
And no GMs or other teams speaking up about this either. Maybe because you know or they know that at some point they get close to the cap. They might need something to go by. And,
absolutely.
You know, you don't say anything, we don't say anything type of thing going on in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, it's... clearly he looks like he wants to play. And I think by this post, it's like he's not 100% sure he could play. I would imagine he has a different diagnosis from somebody that says, you're not done, but you're not really. And so he's, I don't know. Like it's so bizarre that, and I agree with you guys at this point, he's probably sitting down going, well, I guess I'll have to sit out a year because I want my five. I would imagine an agent said, even if you grieve this, where are you going to play? And they can't trade you because they've tried to. And
all he's going to get is a PTO, right? He's not getting
take your money, wait a year, and then try and make a comeback. What a situation. Let's delve back into this game last night. The Jets lost 4-1 to the Edmonton Oilers in preseason action.
Can I ask one question before we go there?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of things going on in Montreal yesterday?
With
Mr. Drouin.
Not scoring a point?
He looked pretty good, though.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's flying around there, like on the power play and all the rest. No point, but ripped one off the bar pretty good and looked pretty good.
I'm not a big fan of the the depth that they have in Montreal. But I really hope he has a good year. Like, because if he struggles early, they're expecting him to be
a messiah.
Number one center, mm-hmm. point a game, get this offense to where it hasn't been in basically a decade. And I just hope he doesn't struggle right out of the gate and he gets kind of crushed by the expectations that are put on him.
One thing that was brought to my attention yesterday that I think the vast majority of NHL fans don't know is the Habs weren't horrible at scoring last year. They're 15th in the NHL goals for. So it's not like they're, you know, 25th, 26th or something like that. And yeah, they lose Radulov and there's stuff to be made up here, but it's not like they were absolutely horrible on offense last year.
Yeah, I believe in Jonathan Drouin. I think he's going to be a dynamic player. I think he's going to be a player that scores 80 points a year. I don't know about this year because I don't know depth-wise and who they play. Want. For the Montreal Canadiens and for him, it'll go a long way if he does it this year. But I believe heavily in Jonathan Drouin, and I think he's going to be a dynamic player in the National Hockey League once he gets those top minutes and who he plays with and everything. So
he looked good last night, a couple of dangles, and he looked dynamic last night.
Here's what Paul Maurice had to say after the game and the 4-1 loss to the Edmonton Oilers and his biggest takeaway from last night's 4-1 loss.
Well, we look like we're two games into a season and we got a lot of guys working the puck around a little bit, trying to find their hands, working it a little bit too much. So our offensive game isn't something that we spent a whole heck of a lot of time on right now, but we'll get it dialed in.
Tell you, the defensive game didn't look very good at times either. Those backdoor tap-ins and some breakdowns and unnecessary risk and questionable parts on the ice, and especially in that second period, right? Like, the first period was brilliant, and people were super excited about it. And then equally, at like the exact opposite of that, you had the second period and the way things sort of played out that just left everyone considerably concerned with all these question marks. It's just the flip mode that happened there was remarkable.
And it was against an Oilers team who were featuring Nugent Hopkins, UC Okunin, and blank. Like, it's not like the Oilers brought their, like, if McDavid comes out there and him and Draisaitl put up a four spot on you, maybe you look at this as, yeah, it's preseason and the top dogs kind of gave it to the Jets in that one. But the concern just magnifies when, you know, no offense to a guy like Kailer Yamamoto, who was their first-round pick this past season, but generally an 18-year-old mid-to-late first-rounder shouldn't be kind of walking circles around you in the offensive zone when you have a top four out there last night, all six of their defensemen.
But they bought
NHL
their
players.
Ultimate Jets kryptonite in Letesti, right?
Unbelievable, yeah.
Well, and Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and I was talking about Nugent Hopkins, was it 2 weeks ago, saying, like, what do they do with him? He's making $6 million. He's probably going to be the third-line center, but you know, to your guys' point that you made at the time when I brought it up, like, well, why wouldn't you want him as a third-line guy? And who cares? Like, Brian Little's making $5-whatever, and he eventually could be the third-line center here. Like, I thought Ryan Nugent Hopkins looked really good last night, but he always looks good against the Jets, too.
It's a problem that a lot of Edmonton Oilers, not named McDavid and Draisaitl, look like number one overall. Yeah. I guess Nugent Hopkins is, but, you know, it wouldn't be a Jets-Oilers game without Mark Letestu getting at least one power play goal.
That second period was scary. The Jets had too many vets out there to look like that in the second period.
We'll take a break. We got a break, and we'll talk some football. We'll hear more from the Jets throughout the morning and hear from you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. But up next, we talk some NFL with our good friend Jeff Reinbold on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's the third hour, which means you'll have another chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Coming up, David Pagnata, thefourthperiod.com, is going to continue the hockey talk with us. And, of course, we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, a full hour of your calls, your thoughts on last night's 4-1 loss by the Jets to the Oilers. Tonight's lineup, which is now out, versus the Minnesota Wild on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. and, of course, Jamal Westerman, and your Winnipeg Goldeyes, who have won back-to-back American Association titles last night with an 18-2 win at Shaw Park. We heard from Rick Forney earlier in the broadcast. I was fortunate enough to get over there, get some post-game audio, talked with Tom Vaith, longtime hitting coach, and just the whole organization is... nothing's lost on them. Not only have they won another championship, but that they did it in back-to-back years in independent baseball where you play 100 games in 110 days and then go to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think anywhere back-to-back is spectacular, man. It's just such, with Collier and Forney, the organization, I just adore the Winnipeg Goldeyes and the great people there. And right from their arrival here in Winnipeg, man, they've just always had a real well-run outfit, super respected, have been incredibly successful, and it's just the coolest thing in the world. You know, next year at the Ukrainian men's dinner, to see maybe Andrew Collier and Forney, they'll have their rings by then, and to see Collier up there with four rings on will be awesome stuff.
Well, Dan Chase was at the Ukrainian men's sportsman dinner this year and had both rings on. Mm-hmm. And I just literally said, how do you put your hands in your pocket? And he said, well, that's the thing, Jim. It might make you uncomfortable, but can you get me some change out of my pocket? Because my hands don't fit with these two rings on. Yeah. So congratulations to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. They won a title in 1994 at Canadian Stadium. They won in 2012. They won in 2016 and now in 2017. Back-to-back championships with an 18-2 win over the Wichita Wingnuts last night at Shaw Park. We'll get your thoughts on that in the Boss Pizza fan line as well. Week 3 in the NFL also kicks off tonight, and we're very happy to welcome back in, this time from England, as he's back with Sky Sports doing NFL analysis. Longtime CFL coach and good friend of the program, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jim. How's everything?
Everything's going well, sir, and we'll start off with, I guess, Week 3. A lot of storylines in the NFL from Week 2. A lot of major injuries so far in this season, but we'll start with tonight's game, the Rams and the 49ers. Rams favored by 2.5. Who do you like there?
I like the Rams, but I'm going to tell you something. I think that you're starting to see evidence of the plan that Lynch and Shanahan have in San Francisco. It's a process. It's going to be a process for them, but I just think with Aaron Donald back and, you know, the way they're playing, the Rams are playing on defense, and you're starting again to see some of what made Jared Goff the, you know, the highest pick player in the draft, and again, for him to go back up to the Bay Area where he played at Cal and play, I think this is kind of a cool deal, so I'm going to give the Rams a nod and a close one.
You're getting ready out in London for the Ravens and the Jaguars. Is Baltimore as good as they appear on defense?
Well, I tell you what, Troy, our lobby of our hotel is just packed this morning with people with purple on and Raven jerseys all over the place. And, you know, so obviously being a man of the people like I am, we had a number of conversations going. And I'll tell you what, they really believe that this defense, and I'm talking about these are diehard Ravens fans, been fans since the franchise came back, They really think that this defense is as good as the 2001 defense. Wow. and some of those Ray Lewis-led defenses. And, you know, you look at it, guys, statistically 10 turnovers in 2 weeks in the NFL, 8 interceptions. It's just phenomenal how they're playing. But, frankly, they're going to need to if they're going to make a playoff run, because offensively they're still, you know, not where you consider the Steelers and some of the better offensive football teams in the league are.
And, you know, speaking of defenses, Coach, with Jacksonville, a lot of people have been waiting maybe a year, 2 years. They're very young, but they've got a lot of talent on their defense. They look great in Week 1 against Houston and not so good last week. What do you expect from this Jaguars defense, and can they take that next step to become an elite defense this year?
Well, I think they're going to have to, because that offensive football team is so reliant on Fournette running the football. And, you know, Baltimore's going to play a lot of eight-man front against them and cancel all the gaps and make the ball run to an unblocked player all the time. And Fournette's kind of a straight-line guy anyway. So if Bortles can't win on the one-on-one matchups outside, it's going to be a long, long day for Jacksonville's offense, which means that defense of Jacksonville is going to be on the field an awful long time. And you're right, they've drafted extremely well on defense. I think that's kind of been Gus Bradley's legacy in Jacksonville, was that they did draft well on defense. And, you know, Ramsey's a great player, and, you know, Fowler's healthy, and I think Calais Campbell was probably the best offseason addition made in the NFL. He's brought leadership and pass rush ability inside, and, you know, so They got Malik Jackson the year before, so they're good on defense now. And you know, the problem for Jacksonville is they don't score any points, and that defense has to play an awful lot of snaps.
Coach, is the problem with the New York Giants all about that O-line, or are there other things that work as well?
You watch them, Troy, and obviously you hit on the biggest problem that they have is, you know, neither Flowers or Robinson, the two tackles, can protect the quarterback. And, you know, it's just unfair for Eli to go back there. And I mean, he can't set his feet. He can't look. I mean, he can't get to his second read. The Lions did a great job against them of game planning them and confusing the protection and giving a bunch of looks in the secondary. But, you know, McAdoo got that job because of his bringing the West Coast offense after Kevin Gilbride got fired. You know, they thought they were holding the ball too much, too many seven-step drops. So McAdoo came in from Green Bay with the West Coast and, you know, getting it out of his hand and protecting the quarterback. And that's really why, you know, he got the head coaching job, and it's kind of gone downhill. Everybody expected, you know, that offense would really roar in 2017, and the defense, you know, had made such an improvement the year before that everybody thought this was a team that had a chance to make a Super Bowl run. But boy, 0-2 after 2 weeks, your chances aren't very good.
Jeff, what do you think of the Denver offense? And a lot of surprises. Not a lot of people were surprised what the defense did against the Dallas Cowboys, but a lot of people were surprised what their offense did against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a couple things. I think maybe we got a little bit of an inflated opinion, I'm saying me personally, of what the Cowboys were able to do after week one. And then you go into a more balanced attack against Denver, and I thought Denver ran the ball well. Elway's done a great job of helping that offensive line. They draft Bowles number, you know, in the first round last year, the kid from Utah, and he played real well. It's going to be interesting. If he's hurt for very long, that's going to make it tough on him. But Menelik Watson at right tackle, who they got from the Raiders, is really a good run blocker, and you saw a lot of evidence of that. They ran the football well. Simeon got out of the pocket. He's growing every week as a quarterback. But I think the biggest thing that they did well in that game was they finally got Simeon and, you know, the receiving core on the same page. And, you know, you look at that bunch and, you know, they're Demaryius Thomas, good player, but if you can get them all involved, then I think you got a real chance. Their tight ends are, you know, decent, but, again, Emmanuel Sanders was kind of the missing guy, and he had two touchdowns, and you really saw what he could do with his short burst quickness in the red zone. So, you know, that really bodes well for them. I had some questions about them coming into the season, but, you know, after 2 weeks, you have to look at them and say, that's a good football team in a really, really good division, because there's three teams in that division that, you know, are all playoff teams, and they'll probably cannibalize themselves, and maybe only one of them will get to the playoffs because of the records.
Coach, has Andy Dalton been abducted by aliens? I mean, who's the guy in the 14 jersey with the tiger stripes?
Gingers. How many gingers have you coached, Coach?
Too many. One too many. You know, I'm going to tell you something. If he hasn't been abducted by aliens, I think there's some people in Cincinnati that would call Mars and see if they could get a flight down here at any minute and get him out of here, because it's been a struggle. And I feel bad for the kid, because you know, you look at how he played early in his career when they had maybe as good an offensive line as there was in football in front of him, and he could, and they had balance in the running game, and he had big play guys outside. You know, and Tyler Eifert was healthy and playing real well at tight end. Now that's all kind of disintegrated on him. You know, the offensive line can't block anybody. They let, you know, that whole bunch go. And, you know, Eifert's been hurt. And, you know, they haven't been dynamic outside. They draft Ross, the sprinter out of Washington, and he's been, you know, nicked all season. So he just hasn't had much help around him. And he's not a guy, fellas, that, you know, can really carry a team by himself. And, you know, there's about eight or nine teams right now in the NFL that are all struggling with being able to protect the passer. So, you know, that's what happens when you're getting hit too many times.
Jeff, how many – and we're talking with Jeff Reinbold, former CFL coach and NFL analyst for Sky Sports over in the UK right now, about week three on the Big Show, TSN 1290. You know, in life, people often struggle with their weight. Eddie Lacy is not – you know, normal people. And he responded after being a healthy scratch after week one with, you don't like what happened or whatever, but at the end of the day, you just control what you can control, continue to go out, practice, and see how it goes. Can you explain why an NFL running back struggles with his weight like this?
Well, I think, again, the immediate knee-jerk reaction that we all have, I know me as a coach, you know, all of us as fans of the game, is you go, how in the world can you not take care of yourself better than that? You're a million-dollar player. You're a professional athlete. You're all those things. But we lose sight of the fact that, hey, Eddie Lacy, beyond all things, is a human being, and we all struggle with issues, and his is his weight, and he's not the, you know, he's not the lone ranger in the world, you know, a person that struggles with weight issues. His challenge is it's going to affect his career, and, you know, it's sad because, you know, it shouldn't be that way, but it is, and somewhere along the way, he never learned, you know, the habits that he needed, and, you know, And Troy will tell you this because he's, you know, been on a lot of teams and seen a lot of players come and go. There are a lot of guys that have tremendous athletic ability, but some part of them they just can't get under control, whether it's their weight, you know, their habits, their night habits, or whatever it is. And it really ends up costing them a career. And here's a guy that came into the league everybody thought was going to be the answer, and certainly in Green Bay, and it hasn't worked there, and he's gone to Seattle, and, you know, and frankly, it's not working there either. So, you know, I think he's you know, kind of down to the last of it, and, you know, I don't know how much more we're going to see of him.
Yeah, and I'm not making fun of him. I'm actually, like, it's when he says you can control just what you can control and you have to keep practicing hard, like, that's, I guess, what stands out to people is that, you know, some people can, and I get that, but it's rare that an elite athlete like that and the environment he's in with nutritionists and trainers and everything that he can't control that.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give you a great line. Jerry Glanville's a friend of mine, and Jerry was in Atlanta, and they drafted a big guy, a big tackle out of Washington, and I won't use the guy's name, but, and, you know, they asked him in training camp what he thought of the kid, and he goes, that guy can be a great player if he just learns two words. And the media guy goes, what's that, coach? He goes, I'm full. So, sometimes those are the hardest two words to say.
Jeff, great stuff as always. We appreciate your insight. Enjoy week three.
All right, guys. Enjoy it.
Thanks so much, Coach. Mahalo, man.
You got it, my brother.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas, baby. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November. See where they take on the Winnipeg Jets and the Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. What you get? Two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and 1,290 buckaroos to help cover all kinds of fun during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15, 8:15 a.m., and 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m., or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, 25th, October 9th, and 23rd, and November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, baby, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and your one and only TSN 1290. It's going to be a bunch of fun. People are getting ramped up, geeked up for that. The Vegas Golden Knights looking pretty doggone good so far in this early preseason anyway. 2-0, undefeated. They're having all kinds of fun on Twitter. You see them calling out the Montreal Canadiens yesterday saying, yeah, you guys have won a bunch of championships, but when there were six teams in the league and they were going after some NFL teams as well yesterday, the social media team, including Gary Lawless, having all kinds of fun with the Vegas Golden Knights. And now we have someone who has qualified for our Hockey Nights in Vegas. Who it be, Wicks?
It is Mr. Dwayne Krillin.
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 Krillin. That's a tough one for a nickname, huh?
Krillzy.
Krillzy! Nice. Yeah,
it's really not tough hockey-wise, is it?
No, it's not that tough. Well, congratulations. Do we have Dwayne, or are we just...
Dwayne had to bounce.
Fair enough.
He's a little excited, which is, that's what we like, but yeah, Dwayne's gone.
Okay,
enjoy
Dwayne,
it.
Well, good luck, man. Good, all the very best to you in capturing one of these prizes, one of these trips down to Vegas to capture, go take in the Jets and the Golden Knights for hockey nights in Vegas. Will be awesome stuff for sure. Good luck to you. We're seeing here what we got on the docket upcoming. Next, we will be talking with David Pagnetta of the Fourth Period. Always a bunch of stuff. They're having actually a party here next week, I think, Wicks. Yeah, that'll be a must-go-to.
At the Pint, I believe.
That'll be a bunch of fun. The Pagnetta and the boys in the Fourth Period, we'll talk to them about that a little bit. We got a clip upcoming here from the Jets, Wicks.
Yeah, let's go to the Tendy. Making his debut. And Steve Mason just kind of giving an overall sense about the game last night.
Okay.
You know, for preseason, you try and find spots to work on things, and the first one's out of the way here. Nice to get that one done, and then we'll come back, work hard tomorrow in practice, and hopefully continue to feel better.
I thought he looked good in there, man. A couple of, like, it was the first power play goal, I believe, that was scored on him. Just horse crap, backdoor. Kulikov lost his man out of the corner right, couldn't catch up, and just like wide open backdoor. A couple of those sort of backdoor tap-ins that you said is a weakness of his. That was quite funny earlier today. But I thought, by and large, Mason looked pretty doggone good in that. Made me feel reassured.
Maybe the only thing last night that could reassure you, right? Sure. Like, outside of him, there wasn't a whole lot of strong performances, but I thought he was solid, and he's as expected. And that clip there doesn't really, I guess, give some insight into what he's like. There's another one where he gets a little more honest, but he's got that Blake Wheeler in him where I wonder how or when the Jets will have to have a sit down with him, because there's some times in Philly where on edge or just really brutally honest.
No filter.
And if the team isn't playing good, and he is playing good, he's not going to be too afraid. And he'll own up to his mistakes, but if the team in front of him hasn't been super sharp, he's not one that'll hold back.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
I like it between him and Matthew Perreault and Blake Wheeler.
Oh, God.
hopefully there's not a lot of cliches coming out of the room. Yeah, I didn't mind his game at all last night. Like, I thought... I don't know what I expected. Like, even if he played poorly, I thought, well, this is preseason and it's his first game. But I thought even with those circumstances of being preseason, he looked really good.
Here's Paul Maurice kind of, I think, sums it up well, too.
Thought he got all the ones. He had as good a chance on the fourth one as he did on the first three. So he made all the stops that I would expect him to stop.
I agree. I think if you watch the game, you'd agree with that. Yeah.
We'll talk some more hockey coming up next when David Pagnetta, thefourthperiod.com, joins us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290 as the Jets are in Minnesota to take on the Wild, 7 o'clock with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns right here on TSN 1290. Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends at 6. The Huron Windows postgame show following the final whistle. And, of course, the afternoon ride starts at 3 with Husser and Rick Ralph with the latest and teeing up the game. As well, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, a half an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line. Your thoughts on the 4-1 loss to the Oilers, the Winnipeg Goldeyes winning back-to-back championships last night at Shaw Park. Mr. Joffrey Leupel and Jamal Westerman had some comments from him earlier in the show about him being done for the season. And not being able to continue, which has been statistically his best year with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And, of course, the Bombers and Red Blacks. We gave away tickets to that game earlier today. We'll get your early thoughts on that, and we'll tee that up extensively as well for you. Great sports week here with Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day tomorrow on the station at 5:30 to tee up the Red Blacks and the Bombers as well. Around the National Hockey League, the officiating and the calls that are being made have been discussed extensively. What were your thoughts on last night's game with penalties concerned?
Well, it seems to be getting better. Certainly in the last night, specifically with the game against with Winnipeg here, right? Like nowhere near the number. But the boys are going to learn, man. You just know dang well. There's going to be pressure from the coaches, internal pressure from the players to stay out of the box. This, I don't think the timeline's going to be long. I don't think it's going to take into the regular season. The guys are going to know here pretty much in the next game or two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure, especially once the regular season starts. To talk hockey with us, we're welcoming back into the program from the fourthperiod.com, Mr. David Pagnotta. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well. It's the summer decided to come in Toronto and visit us, so that was pretty nice.
Oh, well, we're very happy for you all out in Toronto. Enjoy that for sure. David, what are your early thoughts on the way the games are being officiated and if it will carry over into the regular season?
Well, the league wants it to. It's an adjustment. There's no doubt about that. Everybody's readily admitting the fact that this is going to take a little bit of extra time. But if this is how it's going to be, then that's how it's going to be. And the guys hope, the players hope, that if this is the way that they're calling things, if this is how they're doing the face-offs, if this is the way that the game is to be played this season, that it has to be consistent across the board. It can't just happen now. It can't just happen up until November. It can't happen and start shifting a little bit, come the playoff push in February and March, and then all of a sudden there's something different happening in the middle of April. If it's consistent across the board, which has been the league's problem over the last forever, they need to figure that out. And if the officials can maintain that stability of officiating – over the course of the season, I don't see anybody really having a problem with it. It's an adjustment for everybody, for the players, for management, for coaching staff, for the media, for the fans. But it's not that difficult to understand as long as it's being officiated on a consistent basis. So I think everybody across the board would be pretty happy if this is the way it's called. It better be called today as it's going to be called in May.
David, I seem to recall something being reported that the Leafs have something that they could expose or bring to light about Lupul, more or less, if he didn't pump the brakes and all the rest of it, and we saw him delete the initial tweet or Instagram thing that he had, and now he's come out and given an apology. Do you have any inside feelings or understandings about this whole Lupul situation?
Yes. There's certainly a lot of background information that's there, and they obviously discussed it. The parties discussed it, certainly over the last 48 hours, in determining what the best course of action could potentially be. And end of the day, Lupul and his camp decided that I said a few things. I was a little heated at the time, and for whatever the reason, and my mistake, my fault. He owned up to it. Probably shouldn't have said anything in the first place, and. You go from, you put it behind you if you're the Leafs, if you're Lupul, you put it behind you. He's got a year left. Sit back, try to rehab and get better and, get the body going again for, next season when he would be an unrestricted free agent and try to get back with an NHL club. I think that's the focus he has to have right now. And for the Leafs, it wasn't really a distraction for him last season. Yeah, it's a few days of whatever, but I think for the Leafs as a whole, they're focused on their current roster, and Lupul, for whatever the reason, whatever the reason his health can't get him back on the ice. You hope that he eventually gets there, but for the Leafs, he's unfortunately for him an afterthought at this point.
What is his injury, and do you think he plays again in the National Hockey League?
My understanding is that he's got a couple ailments, and. I think he can get there. It really comes down to how he's going to, get better. I mean, if the guy's out there skiing, you've got to imagine that, or snowboarding, whatever he was doing in that Instagram post. If he's doing that, then you got to imagine he's in some kind of pretty decent shape. To what extent, obviously we're not sure, and it's certainly not good enough to play in the National Hockey League this season, at least for Toronto. It really comes down to his conditioning over the course of current season. And if he focuses and if he's, true to his word that he wants to come back and play again, then he's got to hunker down and go out there and hit the gym and do whatever he's got to do to regroup and get better. I got a chance to know him quite well over the course of his tenure here. You know, good guy, nothing against him. Just a matter of now him trying to figure out how real his possible return to the NHL is from a personal standpoint. And if he wants to push it, then he's got to do the right things to do it. And you know, posting those kinds of things, especially around this time of year, raised some questions and might not have been the best decision. But, you know, hopefully for him, he learns from it, moves on. And you know, if it's continuing his career, good for him. If it's not, and you know, whatever direction he goes in, I just hope he understands that, you know, he's got to make that decision pretty quickly at this point.
Let's pretend the 82 games are done here for the NHL season, man, and we're looking back reflecting. Tell me what kind of season Jonathan Drouin just had.
He had probably a 30-goal closing on 70-point season with the Canadiens. That's my anticipation. That's what I expect from him. 70, 75 points, I think, is certainly what the Canadiens are expecting. I expect him to push the envelope this season. And if he's given the reins to do that, there should be, you know, no lost opportunity to put up the numbers and to kind of lead this team from an offensive standpoint alongside the captain, Max Pacioretty. The way that the Canadiens have kind of spread things out from an offensive perspective for now, at least in the first few games here at camp, is, you know, Pacioretty and Drouin are going to be a duo, and then either Hemsky or Lehkonen or somebody on that right side, maybe Gallagher moves up, but then Gallagher's now, in order to spread the offense with Galchenyuk and Philip Deneau for the time being, the Habs want to spread things out a little bit. They want to have some opportunities to you know, create some more offensive chances from one of their top two lines, and that, you know, hopefully for them, would allow them to spread the offense more by splitting the defensive pairings against them. So if somebody's focused on Drouin and Pacioretty, it's going to, you know, leave a little bit extra room in terms of overall ice time and who's against them for the second unit, and vice versa. Between that and power play opportunities, you anticipate Jonathan Drouin having a good season. I expect him to. He's embraced the scenario that he's in. It's not a guy that's going to feed into the pressure. Really hasn't. We saw that with Tampa and the whole trade you, don't trade you thing, where he kind of cruised through that. It's a matter now of him, you know, putting up, you know, once the season gets going. And I think he's comfortable with that role, and I'm expecting him to have that kind of a season.
David Pegnata, thefourthperiod.com, joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290, 41 minutes past the hour. Here we go, David. It's our annual question to you every time you're on. What's the latest on Matt Duchene? Who's interested and who's at the forefront? First of all, David, are you at the point where you hope he doesn't get traded so we just keep asking you every time you're on?
No, definitely not. No, I definitely want this guy traded like 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago even. I know he, you know, certainly does. I don't think at this point there's no real indication that there's anybody at the forefront. There are teams that are still knocking on the door. You know, Ottawa's still in the mix, Vancouver, the Canadiens, you know, Columbus is still kind of there. But nobody's really stepping up, the Rangers. So there's interest, but now it's a matter of finding out exactly, you know, has the price dropped at all? It certainly doesn't sound like it has. It certainly sounds like Joe Sakic and everyone's kind of holding, you know, things close to the vest and wanting to, you know, maximize the return. I'm wondering when it gets to the point where Pat Brisson, his agent, steps in or is allowed to step in to try to facilitate some kind of trade with another team. And sometimes, you know, when the agent gets involved in doing that, it opens up the doors a little bit more for teams to, you know, pursue a trade for a player of his caliber. Now, whether it's the one teams I mentioned, whether it's Carolina reentering the mix, because we know there were discussions close to the draft surrounding Noah Hanifin, but the Hurricanes just weren't interested in that type of a trade at the time. Maybe things change now. Maybe the parameters of the deal expand a little bit. Hard to say at this point, but I'm really interested to see if it hasn't happened already, and I don't get the sense that it has. If Pat Brisson gets into the mix, then I would suspect we see something move relatively quickly. Just right now, it's still, you know, molasses.
Dave Haxall putting Giroux on the left side of Couturier with Voracek on the right side. Your thoughts of what that line might accomplish?
Well, it certainly has the potential to get things going from a, you know, from an offensive charging perspective, and I think more so than anything, it's trying to rejuvenate the offensive capabilities of Jonathan Drouin. You know, Sean Couturier is a great two-way center and a great two-way forward. It's time to exploit his offensive abilities a little bit more. And now that they've got, you know, they lucked out in the draft, you know, they feel they want to spread things out. They've got a couple good, some very good young pieces on the back end, but they've got to get the offense going with you know, new goaltender and everything. They've got to get things going and provide that support to the back end and to the guy between the pipes. So I think right now this is a matter of them creating a line that's a go, fully charged unit. And it could certainly, and it should certainly rejuvenate, you know, the career from an offensive perspective of Giroux. I like it. I don't know why it hasn't been tried on a more consistent basis before. And it could and should be pretty potent, providing those guys get the job done. And it's going to exploit Couturier's offensive capabilities, certainly. So I like it from a perspective of, you know, giving it a boost to the captain. Voracek should be able to, maintain his performance consistently, and it exploits that of Couturier. It could be a very dangerous line this season.
What do you think of the Tampa Bay Lightning? They back in the playoffs, and not only are they back, but can they contend for the Stanley Cup again this year?
They should. They absolutely should. That's their mindset without a doubt, and that's what I'm expecting of them, is the battle for first in their division. And not only that, battle for, you know, as I said, as you said, the Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup final. They brought in some veteran pieces, which I liked. They've got a pretty young core overall. They've got some good young pieces. Whether Mikhail Sergachev opens things up on opening night on the main roster or not, I like the additions that were made for this team, bringing in Dan Girardi to solidify the back end and add stability there. And I know a lot of people have been chirping him primarily because of his contract, but give him less minutes, give him less of responsibility, and he's going to be more sound in his own zone. And that's what Tampa Bay wanted. And I think he's going to certainly do that and perform to that extent. You know, you're putting him around 15, 16 minutes a night rather than, you know, 17, 18, 19, on a consistent basis throughout. If he's, you know, hovering between 14 to 16 minutes, this is a guy that you know, should be able to, you know, provide that shutdown mentality that he used to bring to the table, but doing it so with less minutes. And bringing in Chris Kunitz, you know, he's got the Stanley Cup rings, he's coming off back-to-back championships, he's going to bring that mentality into the room and harness that for the younger guys like he did in Pittsburgh. I like the additions they've made. I like how they complement the young guys. But really, at this point, you know, it comes down to Kucherov and it comes down to Steven Stamkos. And if those guys get going with the youth in place, and whether it's Palat or Killorn still providing secondary scoring, and the veteran presence up front and on the back end with Girardi and Kunitz, I like their chances this year.
Right before we let you go, David, the fourthperiod.com is coming to Winnipeg.
Yes, we are. We're doing a season opening tour with Fanatics and NHL Shop Canada across the country. Actually, our first one is in Ottawa tonight, and we're going to be at the Pint next Thursday in Winnipeg. You're going to be able to, you know, check out some of the fun activations, some of the fun new things that they've got going with Fanatics. They're obviously the new merchandising partner with the NHL and providing the secondary jerseys. They're bringing NHL Shop to Canada, so you won't have to go to the U.S. site to buy stuff. They're going to have some cool stuff there. Upper Deck is part of it. EA Sports, we're going to be giving away a bunch of swag and copies of NHL 18, some swag, some, you know, free tablets and some other fun stuff from a lot of our sponsors. We're excited for it. We hope to see you guys there, and come on by the Pint next Thursday starting at 7 o'clock.
Well, I don't get invited many places, so I sincerely appreciate it. These guys get invited all the time, so I look forward to it. Thanks for doing this, David, as always. Appreciate your insight.
You got it. See you guys.
Thanks, David. Take care, man.
We'll take a break and tee up the Boston Pizza fan line next. Lots to get to on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, wide open at 9 a.m. Get your thoughts, your impressions, who you liked, who you didn't, what you take from last night's 4-1 loss, the Edmonton Oilers, from the Winnipeg Jets. Your guys' thoughts on the game.
Mm, the There's not many games I can recall that they look so absolutely brilliantly dominating in the first period to what in the hell is going on out there in the second period. It was a 180. It was the old flip mode, right? The, just dominating, 23-9 shots directed towards the net in the first period. All kinds of posts. It sounded like a symphony in the barn. Five posts all told. Really could have changed the outcome of the game, quite frankly, the 2.5 inches of pipe there. But whatever happened, they get all flat, fall asleep in the second period, start to wake up a little bit with a couple minutes left, and then just can't recover and put anything in the net after that. So it started off so promising. And then you get, I think what we saw in the second period is what is probably about the worst nightmare Jets fans have, where that, whatever that is with this team, that level of inconsistency, that has got to go away, or the boys aren't climbing above the playoff line. There were way too many veterans there out there last night against a greatly reduced Edmonton Oilers team for that to happen. That is very scary. Preseason or not, that scared me.
Yeah, that's now two preseason games where we have to, after the result, go, it's just preseason. It's just preseason. So, look, if you want to give them two, that's fine. A third one is inexcusable at this point. Like, they have to show a lot better in their next preseason game. And for me, the most concerning thing, we've seen Minnesota come in. We've seen Edmonton come in. And they both employed extremely aggressive penalty kills and a number of times made life really difficult on the Jets' power play. Winnipeg's penalty kills so far this preseason has been unbelievably conservative, and they're going to get, if they do that again this regular season, they're going to get slaughtered out there. And I've been real high on the Jets. I think that they can improve in a lot of the areas, but if we see that same penalty kill tactic employed, man, it's going to be real hard for this team to get back into the postseason. You cannot, in today's NHL, go into that passive box and expect to have a PK somewhere above 80%, let alone near the top 10.
So passive. They're just collapsing in that box so low, so tight. It's incredible.
What'd you think of the officiating? Because that seems to be the topic around the National Hockey League. And not like, what do you think of the officiating as if it's poor, just the number of calls, the number of penalties taken.
Well, last night, specifically for this game, we go from watching 17 power plays to 9. So that's palatable, right? You can handle that. The boys are going to learn, man, and the league is going to learn much quicker, I think, than most think.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. No issues at all.
Tonight's roster is out. Eric Comrie, Connor Hellebuck will be the goalies. Third goalie is traveling in Jamie Phillips to Minnesota, but the lineup includes Poolman, Scarbosa, Cameron Schilling, Sherratt, Trouba, Kopp, Buddy Robinson, Hendricks will play again, Adam Lowry returns, Joel Armia, J.C. LePond will get his first preseason action, Brendan Lemieux will get his second, Jack Roslovic will play in back-to-back games, Marco Dano draws back in, Nelson Noje, Julian Melchiori, Chase DeLeo, and Kyle Connor will get another game on the Winnipeg Jets lineup.
One thing for sure with this lineup and how like, there's not a lot of vets out there. Kyle Connor should get a boatload of ice time tonight.
Winnipeg Gold Eyes win back-to-back championships last night. Game 5 at Shaw Park, they take it 18-2 and are once again American Association champions.
Just so wonderful for the organization and up and down, so many great people involved. Couldn't be happier for everyone associated with the Gold Eyes. Big-time tip of the cap to you. Enjoy this. This is awesome. Now, 4 rings for our buddy Andrew Collier and Rick Forney. This is tremendous. Well done.
What are your thoughts on the back-to-back championships? The Jets versus the Oilers last night. The Jets versus the Wild tonight. Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets pregame. And we also heard from Jamal Westerman. Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290 or text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. You next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back
Back on the big show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki in the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jets and Oilers, Jets and Wild tonight on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Jamal Westerman, done for the year, spoke with the media and the Goldeyes when back-to-back American Association titles 18-2 last night in Game 5 to win another ring and a championship for the city of Winnipeg. Congratulations to the Goldeyes. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line. Once again, 780-1290. Kerry, you're kicking us off today on the big show. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Wasn't that impressed regarding the Jets' performance. Let's be frank, gentlemen. I don't care, exhibition. It's like watching old reruns of MASH. I've seen this before. The inconsistency. Today's game and the level of effort is going to have no bearing whatsoever. The fact being, it's going to be laden full of rookies. So they're going to come with high energy, etc. However, they're not going to be playing when the puck drops, you know, game one of the season. So everyone else, you know, the team on paper is getting better. The rookies are a year older and stronger. So I look, what is the only thing that's consistent? And to me is, it's those guys behind the bench, the special teams, etc. Brandon hit it on the point regarding the PK. Between the power play and the PK as a coach, the easiest one to coach and to turn around more quick is the PK. It's tough to teach the goal scoring, but the PK. Anyone can watch tape on other teams and get it. Yet we're doing the same thing over and over. It's insanity. And
what would you like to see them do different?
Well, what I'd like to see is when we had when other teams have had structured changes of coaching, it's a whole new attitude. Watch what happens in Dallas and other teams with Hitchcock and when Minnesota, and it's a whole mindset, because I think we have the talent there, but how many times do we have to come out in the second period with flat? You know, come out strong. It's the same old, same old. It's like watching Bill Murray and Groundhog Day. And I think a lot of fans are tired of it. So I think what ends up has to happen is, and we've just signed Breeze to a long-term contract. We don't even know how long that is. But philosophically, I think what's happening with the coaching and the special teams, I would like to have the special teams coach get them on the air and have them explain themselves. That is such a simple thing to take away the passive nature of a PK and be more aggressive. Watch Minnesota's penalty kill for two or three times, and you got it. These players know it, but they're told to play passively. They're not, and that's what they're instructed to do. So, and unfortunately, this the GM and et cetera, they're very loyal to the coaching staff. So they're going to be very reluctant to make any changes. So what I would like to see is, I'd like to see in the off season, but it's too late now, is to have changes on the special teams. And I wouldn't have signed Maurice to a long term and let him play it out until Christmas and see what happens. But, man, it's the same old, same old. And, you know, sometimes when folks say it's, you know, it's only preseason, boy, you guys are whistling past a graveyard. You know, it's an intervention is required.
Well, the argument of it only being preseason, Kerry, is if they were 2-0 right now in the preseason and had won by 6 goals in both games, do you think they're winning the Stanley Cup? Like, that's the argument of preseason, and I understand that. I started this show today saying, like, I do get the concern that there was some same habits in yesterday's preseason game, but that's the age-old argument of preseason. Like, you haven't won anything and you haven't lost anything in the preseason, but the trend of what we're talking about, and I guess let's compare the penalty kill last night to Monday night. Like,
it was the exact same, man.
Did you like it Monday night?
It was the exact same. I didn't understand when it sounded like there was a difference. It was the exact same. They collapsed exactly down low in that tight box like that, and it was just super. It was as passive as you got, and you saw when Minnesota went on their penalty kill, bam, somebody get the puck, bam, somebody right there, bam, taking away time and space. That's, and Minnesota, the eighth best penalty kill in the NHL last year. So it's perplexing and it's frustrating. It's impossible for me to believe that that's what they're planning to do come regular season. It's so impossible to think that's what they... I just refuse to believe that. Like, they're... I don't know, they don't want to give tape or film or what in the world's going on. And you know, the whole argument that, hey, these are new guys out there. Well, that doesn't make sense at all. Like, these are, you know, high-level guys, man. It doesn't take that long to incorporate what you want to do on a penalty kill on a special team, man. So it doesn't make any sense.
Well, the new guys make sense to me. I mean, it doesn't matter what system you're playing when you bring in new guys. But I'm not making that as an excuse. Yeah. I think there's just...
But you can have your penalty kill, and you can tell do this, this, then that in your meetings that you have available to you and practices prior to going into games to teach or to coach going into this remarkably passive small box in front of the net like that and just let everything happen around you and not pursue the puck whatsoever, don't apply any pressure anywhere. That it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
And making mistakes while being aggressive would be one thing like that. I think if it's preseason and you're trying to learn the new system and you're seeing them pressure the puck carrier and, hey, they just don't have it down yet, like, I would be okay with that. I would be okay with an aggressive penalty kill that gives up a couple because they're still trying to work out, you know, some of the finer points of their special teams. But it's been – it just doesn't make sense. And the most confusing thing to me is that when the Jets made the playoffs, they had a dynamite penalty kill. It was awesome and it was fun to watch. And what did they do?
Suffocating, right? Yeah, they bam, right away, did jump on guys.
And I thought Blake Wheeler – exemplified that perfectly, yeah. Where he would get into the team would get into the zone, and it would be bam. The second you cross that blue line, the second you have the puck, there was no room to operate whatsoever, and they were outstanding on the penalty kill. And then since that season, I don't know the reason, but they, for whatever, decided to go into more of this passive, maybe try and clog up the middle of the ice type of thing, and it doesn't work in today's NHL.
But I'll tell you, Wicks, like, we haven't seen this passive. You know, the first two games in these preseason games, the Jets' penalty kill has never looked this passive. Like, the box is so small in front of their own net, and just they're not moving anywhere towards anyone. It's amazing.
Thanks for the call, Kerry. We appreciate that and the opinions. We'll go to we got a lot of calls lined up here. Actually, we'll go to that. And when they made the playoffs and the penalty kill, that was under Maurice as well. Like, yep. It was. The same system. I know Kevin the Garbage Man on Twitter asking why.
It wasn't the same system. That's what we're saying.
Well, it was under the same coach. Do you think Paul Maurice said this has been very successful, I'm going to change this?
Yeah, it's different, man. They were way more aggressive. Something, it was different. It can't be, you're not watching the games if that's not observed and understood.
Kevin the Garbage Man on Twitter asking when Dennis Bayek said, well, I don't think in practice they focused in on the power play and penalty kill yet. And he said, well, why not? That's been their biggest weakness. And I just replied, in my experience of covering hockey, after the first cuts are is when they start getting individualized on specialty teams. And the reason for that is there's 54 players on the ice right now. They're all trying to get evaluation in. They're all trying. There's just not a lot of time to sort of, with that many players,
focus in on it. Well, sure, man, but every team's got that. You still have some base model and understanding of what you want to do out there. So why you would have this base foundation for your penalty kill and what you're going to bounce, like, why not start with something way more aggressive right out of the gate?
Well, maybe they're just, like, again, not spending a lot of time on it. There's 54 guys. There's only two ice sessions a day.
Every team's doing that, though, right?
Just let me finish. And then, yes, every team's doing that. And not every team, especially teams, look great all year. I'm just saying this is how it works. Kevin asked on Twitter, and I said, so when they cut it down, then that's when they focus on it more and say, so now they just go, this is what we want to do. And if it's not executed like last night, then now they have another game, they make some cuts, and then they go, okay, this is the film that we've got from the first two games. This is what we didn't like. This is what we want to do better this fashion. I'm just saying that, like, when you ask me why... When Dennis Bayek said they haven't spent a lot of time on it, well, that's why. They have two ice sessions a day and 54 players to get ice time for.
But they still have a penalty kill that they're bringing to these games on the ice. Why they're doing making the decision to be so remarkably passive is still mind-blowing to me.
We'll get to more of the calls now. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Neil, you're on the program.
Hey, I'm desperately trying not to be the guy that loses his brain after two preseason games. But
we're hearing that a lot today.
Yeah, I know. But and to a certain degree, the Jets brought it on themselves. They talked about urgency and everything out of the gate. They put Vets in the lineup, you know, right out of the chute. So, you know, you kind of expected a little more than what we've got. I mean, one thing to keep in mind, you know, the Vets in preseason are probably going at 70%, and the guys trying to make the team are going at 110. So, but there's one thing that's starting to bother me, and I'm the guy that's always in the dressing room defending Buff. But I'm finding it harder and harder right now. Two preseason games, and he's had two brutal giveaways in his own end. You know, if nothing else, keep it simple. Try to keep your sheet clean, and to be so nonchalant with the puck. I mean, he's had two just brutal giveaways in his own end. And you know what? I didn't play high-end hockey, but I played defense, and even I know that you have to watch the backdoor play on a power play. I mean, that's not rocket science. Like, just some basic fundamentals that seem to be missing, and it seems to be the same old, same old.
Yep, and specifically with Buff, you're talking about a guy, 23 minutes and 26 seconds last night, zero hits, two giveaways. The most glaring giveaway you're mentioning, I believe, is the one in the third period that ends up being the disallowed goal. And then on the two-on-one that was scored just previous to that, I believe he makes a horrible read on the play and allows the pass to happen in a situation where it's at. This is after the Nikku turnover, but plenty of time to recover from it and for Buff just to leave the shooter on with Mason. Instead, he doesn't commit to the and take away the pass, and it was so easy there. Like, it was just mind-blowing, the Buff's error on the play. He was horrible last night. And I just that, and this is why, like, the decision-making process, where he is at mentally, in a long way, that is going to define the season of the Winnipeg Jets, in my opinion. There's no one that's going to influence the outcome of the season more so than number 33.
The problem with doing this on the preseason, though, is I didn't think Blake Wheeler was very good last night. I think, as Neil said, Blake Wheeler was going at about 70%. Monday night, I didn't think Nick Ehlers was rolling last night,
but he was last night.
Like
the vets, I'm not too concerned about. Like that, and especially, you know, guys in their late 20s, early 30s, do you think they're putting a whole lot into preseason games?
Well,
especially,
that's what I mean.
Especially, like, the early ones. Like, yeah. Look, if this happens in the final two games when it's the whole roster, then yeah, I'd be okay with getting on the vets a little bit more. He didn't play very good at all. I'm not going to try and defend that.
I would think, boys, when you're coming into camp and you have this fresh new mentality that we have arrived, we're here, we're making some noise, this whole 70% thing on preseason games, I understand keeping yourself, like, being safe out there as much as possible sort of thing. But I don't know, man. I thought the Wheeler, Scheifele, line A line was fantastic in the first game. I thought even Ehlers was pretty strong in the couple. Like, I'm just not buying that the guys that aren't out there trying to set a tone, a pace out there, giving her in these opportunities that they have to be out there. And not giving her or holding the reins back a little bit in the name of safety, I can understand that to some degree. But gross mental errors, that's not something that's going to fade away when you lock into regular season with a guy that makes them all too often.
But that's what I saw. Like, I thought, I agree with you. I thought Line A, Scheifele, and Wheeler looked really good in the first game. I thought they were all going at about 70% last night. I didn't think they were spectacular last night.
In the first period, you didn't think that?
I did.
In the first period?
Yeah. I didn't see Wheeler flying through the middle and creating a whole bunch of stuff like he did on Monday night.
They were dominant
and
in the first period.
Ehlers on Monday night, I didn't think was, you know, electrifying. Last night, I thought he played really good. Like, I don't expect veterans to go 110% every single preseason shift.
Well,
I really don't.
Especially when you're trying to change the DNA and personality of this team. You should be.
Lots of calls to get to. We'll get to them next when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, lots of calls to get to, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jay, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir. Hi, Jay. All right, try again, Jay. Cameron, you are on the Big Show. Go ahead, Cameron.
Hi there. I just wanted to mention how everybody's saying how bad the Jets have been in the preseason and to not say it's just preseason. I feel if the Jets were winning and doing really well, people would be saying the same thing. It's just preseason. Don't get too excited about it. And I don't think that's a fair thing to say about them.
And to be honest, some people would be saying we're going to win the Stanley Cup. They're 2-0 and stuff. Like, I mean, it's people have their opinions, which is great. It's I just sent out a tweet. A guy was saying they have the same issues. They should have been worked out last year. And I just said, well, I agree it should be getting better, but I didn't think all their issues would be fixed in 6 days of camp and two preseason games.
Yeah,
but I understand the fever because last night there were some of the same issues.
Yeah.
But I in 6 days of camp and two games with mixed rosters, I didn't think it would all be figured out by now.
Yeah, and they got to get their legs back.
Let's remember who they're playing coming in, boys. They're playing against all the excuses we make for them are shared with every single team coming in. And the guys and the teams coming in, look at their rosters. And for the most part, when you're talking like the top 4D and the top 6 forwards, they should be making some noise. Now, there's a lot of bar hit last night, a lot of posts and all the rest of it. But and to me, in preseason, I don't care what sport you're talking about, you pull the reins back on celebration for wins for sure. But if there are ongoing concerns with concerns from the past that are being exposed during preseason, that is time to be concerned.
Yeah, and look, results, if you're basing the preseason on results, it's fool's gold. Either way, losses or wins. It's about what you see in the process. And look, if the Jets' penalty kill gave up 3 goals last night, but they were aggressive as hell all over the ice and trying out a new look at least,
yeah.
I don't think we would have this. I don't think a lot of people would have the same reservations about some of what happened last night. It's just no marked difference is kind of the main concern here. And look, preseason game 2, I'd say that's fair to not get super up in arms, but you're kind of running out of games now, and we're running out of reasons to really kind of have concrete evidence of why is the penalty kill getting better? It's because this and this. Like, that hasn't showcased itself so far for the Jets.
At the very least, yeah. If you're a fan of the Jets, you have to have a raised eyebrow after 2 games.
Thanks for the call, Cameron. We appreciate it. Rick, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
Everything's good?
Yeah, you?
Yeah, good. I guess let's start with the positives then about the Jets. I mean, for me, I thought Mason looked good. And I thought Tyler Myers looks good. He looks healthy. Skates like a gazelle.
Yeah.
I thought Trouba looked good.
Yeah.
Especially the way they get the pucks through to the net. I like that. See, they showed that one replay head up. And it doesn't have to be some kind of booming buff-like slapper. Just put it towards the net. So I mean, they look good.
Bingo.
On the downside, though, and again, it's early, but to me, and I said this before on the show, and I'm going to say it right now, and I don't care if it's the first preseason game or the first minute of summer, I don't think they'll ever win with Buff on defense. He makes the most money, and he's one of their bigger liabilities. I mean, I would put defensively now Trouba, even Myers, Morrissey, and I haven't seen enough of Kulikov, but I think by the first month of the season, they're all better defensemen than he is. I'm not saying they're better players all around, like offensively. Buff brings we love Buff because he does stuff that makes us happy. He crushes guys, he scores a big goal, he carries the puck and stuff, but he's a defensive liability. There's no doubt about it. You can debate it all you want. It's just the God's honest truth. And at 7.6, it hamstrings a team right off the hop. And then there's Maurice, who I don't know him as a person. He seems like a super, super guy. I don't think they'll win with him behind the bench either. Track record is not that good. And even just to see the penalty kill look like that. I mean, this is a team that hasn't won a playoff game in 7 years, and we can pee down our legs all we want about excuses and stuff. Not one playoff game. And you'd think they'd be just a little bit hungrier to show the fans that, oh, yeah, this is good. I mean, they were talking a pretty big game before the season, but that second period for me last night, I was kind of disappointed, very, very disappointed, to be honest with you. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen this year, and I'm hopeful they make the playoffs, but
when Big 33 is playing indifference and, you know, giving the puck away like a $2.6 million player instead of 7.6, it ain't going to happen.
Okay, we got to go, Rick. We appreciate the thoughts. We'll take more of your calls and touch on this when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Man Cave includes a $500 men's Burton gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place. A Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to an upcoming home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. A rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. The Mam Cave includes a $500 women's Burton gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza party for 10 at Boston Pizza, two tickets to see Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls night out, including two seats for an upcoming home game at Bell MTS Place, plus a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, and another rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kit. Select your cave of choice online at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. Adam, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, so what I'd like to say is about the Jets is basically what is it going to take to win? I believe this team has all the pieces in place here. We've got everything we need offensively and defensively, even goaltending. So what we're missing right now is the final ingredient, and that's what it takes to actually become winners, you know, and become champions. So what's needed is the players are going to have to believe that they're a winning team. Deep down inside that they're going to win game in and game out. And I think a lot of that is going to come from what is said by the management and by the coaches. You know, when they shoot the puck, they have to know that it's going in. And they need to decide, you know, is Winnipeg a championship team? You know, on paper we are. We should be. Statistically, we dominated yesterday offensively, you know, and in a lot of ways we're an elite team, but it's not going to put itself together and we're not going to jive unless something happens where everything comes together and works and operates as a winning championship team. What I seen so much last year and what I seen today that really bothers me and made me want to call today is we spend 6 or 7 minutes in the other zone and the team comes down the, our end of the ice for 30 seconds and bangs a goal in. You know, and then we pick up our socks, we go down, we spend 6 or 7 minutes firing shots left, right, and center, and then the team gets the puck and skates down for 30 seconds and bangs a goal in. And to me, there's something happening that's beyond skill and beyond physical capability. Something's got to come together, you know, with chemistry and as a unit that stops this type of stuff from happening. And I think it's the power of belief has to be in there, and they need to be aware that this is happening defensively and, you know, take things to this type of level where, you know, maybe it's overskating, maybe it's doing too much, but, you know, do what we can offensively and focus on preventing that type of stuff from happening. You know, and I think Paul Maurice has got to do something. If a few more games like that happen, he's going to have to make a move, a dramatic move, and he's going to have to light a fire and make a statement, a bold statement. Management, if this continues 5 games into the original season, management is going to have to make a bold statement with something. I don't know what it is, but a fire has to be lit and something needs to happen where we're not
you know, running ourselves rampant and then allowing the other team to just come in and bang a goal in. Something has to mix that up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand what you're saying, Adam. You bring up some valid points. I mean, touching on the point again, I think that a regular season game is a little different intensity-wise. But you bring up some valid points. You guys want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I agree strongly with what you're saying. If you take what was witnessed last night, they come out and offer up the first period and look really good, and then whatever happens in that second intermission for them to come out in that second period and play at that level, if things along those lines still existed in the regular season, five games in even, people would be outside the MTS Center with pitchforks and torches. Like that, there's no acceptance, I don't think, or patience, tolerance with that type or level of play here coming into the season. And I think I don't think very much time would pass for things to potentially change along the lines of what you're saying there, Adam, as far as a profound change maybe to happen. I think if you're seeing that level, and I don't know if it's personnel or, you know, when you take into consideration, real honestly looking at it, when you're talking system and looking at that penalty kill, and like, what is that? Where's that going? If that's the deal early in the season here, I know it's preseason, and it is. That's the reality of it. But if this carries forward into the regular season, there will be change. I agree.
And I don't think we mentioned this on air yet, but The Athletic did their season preview of the Winnipeg Jets, and they actually have them making the playoffs and reaching 95 points. But to your point there about the special teams, that was kind of the one thing illustrated in this that could hold this team back. And there's a graph here that takes a look at the net impact of both the power play and penalty kill combined during Paul Maurice's history as a head coach. And it's been, looks like 15 years. 2002 was the last time he had a net positive impact on his team's special teams. So that's really, we could talk about goaltending too and how that's hurt the team, but if the power play and penalty kill is decent, that goes towards helping your goalies' numbers, and that goes a long way towards this team realistically being a playoff team, because even strength, there's some warts, but that's not the main issue. Well,
last year they were fine even strength, right?
And there were better years before
half.
That.
Yep.
So yeah. that's really the main concern right now, and that's why games like last night can be so troubling. Not necessarily the power play. I think it'll be all right. But to see the penalty kill not show any marked signs of not only improvement, but at least a different strategy,
that's
why a lot of people can have some, I think, legitimate doubts about this team.
Do you buy into the fact that they're not going to roll everything out right now? Like they're going to have cuts on Sunday. They're going to work on some things, and maybe what the power play looks like in the sixth and seventh preseason game might not be what it – like, do you think it's possible they just sit there and they go, here's a penalty kill, go do it, and as opposed to sort of showing the league and
– Well, the only thing that doesn't make sense to me about, like, showing the league, you know, we're seeing teams are going to have a foundation and a base structure for what they're going to do during the regular season. I don't think you're going to go – uber passive penalty kill to something along the lines of an aggressive, like overly aggressive one. It's so perplexing. Not many things leave me speechless. What I'm seeing on that penalty kill is definitely, it's absolutely mind blowing. And I just don't get how you don't have something, even if it's a fairly simple structure, like what Wicks is saying, hey, go, you know, this is what we want to accomplish on the penalty kill and put it in place right out of the gate and have guys out there making mistakes, being too aggressive and, you know, all that sort of thing. Because they're even more passive than they were last year. Like, it is amazing how completely crashed or condensed down that box is in front of the net, and they're just sitting there allowing all these things to happen and develop around them. It's mind-blowing.
Look, JT, it could be possible. Like, it could be that they're holding some of their cards close to the vest and they don't want to showcase things. the only thing is, what can we go on? And that's what we've seen both in this preseason and in the past few years. And it's just, it's a really, really optimistic hope, I think, that's kind of the case right now. I hope it's the case too, but it's just, I just don't know if I've seen it in hockey. We see it in football. Football to me is a bit different though, because plays are so set in stone and tendencies are a lot easier to kind of digest. And so I can understand why you'd want to keep things under wraps with hockey.
It works for a game. Oh, they're going with this passive box. Oh, they're aggressive.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
I just don't think they're, like, spending a lot of time on it right now. I think that they're going to make cuts on Sunday. They're going to get, like, there's, like, Adam Lowry's probably going to be on the penalty kill. He's not in the lineup last night. Like, I think, personally, in my experience of covering hockey training camps, they have so many people there. They just go, here's the, do this, do that.
Well, sure,
and they evaluate individuals. And then they sit down after the cuts and they go, these are the people that are going to go here. This is how we want this to work specifically. They look at the film from the first couple of games and they delve into it more. And that's just what I've...
But to do this, do that should be reflective of what you're ultimately going to be trying to accomplish from a systematic standpoint. It shouldn't be do this, do that on our base understanding of what our PK is going to be, and it's going to be wildly passive like this, and then all of a sudden in game 4 or 5 you come out and have this wildly aggressive or considerably more aggressive penalty kill. It should still be the base of what you're going to carry forward during the regular season, you would think.
Well, yeah, and maybe they just didn't execute it well. Maybe
no,
Paul Maurice is sitting there.
You can't say that, man. Come on, JT.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe Paul Maurice is sitting there in the intermission going, you guys are collapsing too much.
No way. Come on, man.
Well, were you in the room?
Jim, come on. For God's sakes, this is 2 games in a row that they are collapsing that box right in front of the goaltender, and they're not moving. So, and when you watch that, watch tonight, watch the penalty kill of the Jets, and watch the Wild. It is night and day difference. There is no way there's a lack of execution to that degree. They are obviously being told to play like this. There's just no way, man. Come on.
All right. Who's next on the Boss Pizza fan line? 780-1290.
We got Brad.
Brad, go ahead, sir. Brad?
Hello.
Hey, Brad, how are you?
Good, how are you guys?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Good. Listen, I just have a comment with regards to the Jets here. I know it's preseason and you know, there shouldn't be any alarm bells going off. But at the same time, you got to kind of take a look at the big picture here. You know, I watched this program on TV. It's called Street Outlaws. It's about these drag racers. These guys have like 2,500 horsepower per car. And they tune it up, they tune it down. So the Jets have enough horsepower to put the puck in the net. Hopefully now we have somebody in net that can, you know, save our butts once in a while. But the thing is, it comes down to the driver. It still comes down to the driver. It doesn't matter how much horsepower you have. And Paul Maurice is our driver right now. And I just don't see the guy being able to put it together. I mean, he's had a few years now, but you got to look at his record as well. Like 19 years, 5 playoff appearances. I don't know. I don't think he's the right guy for us, and I think we had the opportunity to trade up last year, but no, we renewed his contract, which may be good, may be bad, we'll see, but at least I think we should have waited till the end of the season to see if we wanted to renew the guy's contract or not. But I'm going to let you guys go, and you guys can talk about it.
Thanks for the call, Brad, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Guys' thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I've made it. I don't think it matters. You know, it doesn't apply to the cap. If there's trouble and if True North believes that the best way to turn the team around or get the team on track and they need a fundamental change from that perspective, I don't think that they'll hesitate to pull the trigger if that's what needs to happen to this group here.
And I'll go back to the conversation when they signed the extension Cheveldayoff had and even when he was hired. They hired Paul Maurice and said, we're going to go young after this season, and it's going to be a lot of, you know, to steal a line from Mike Babcock, Payne, we're going to go young, develop, do this way. And he's their guy. He's done what they've asked him to do, and they believe in him, so the extension signed. I think if things go south or things don't work, but, you know, in all honesty, I've been around teams where I was there when Claude Noel was there, and I could see it sort of starting to slip, and the guys really liked Claude Noel. I don't know if by the end they were still believing in him. From what I've seen and from what we've heard, the guys on the team believe in Paul Maurice, and the organization certainly does. So I mean, I understand this is going to be a conversation that's going to go on all season long, and I understand why it went on all last season, but that's all I can tell you is I'm not in the room, but from what I've seen and heard, the players like him, they want to play for him, and the organization definitely likes him, and the organization said when they extended him, he's done exactly what we've asked him to do, so... It is what it is.
I've been a different sport here, but I've been in a room where the guys love the head coach, and they're doing everything possible, and they want him there. But for whatever reason, it just wasn't working and turning into winning. And so, like, sometimes that can happen, man. And this group, this isn't let's let him grow, and we're willing to tolerate growing pains here this season. They're here, they're poised, they need to make some noise, and there's a lot of pressure on this group right out of the gate. And that first period to second period thing, that can't happen. Playoff teams don't do that, and there's too many veterans last night for that to happen.
And we got a break, but along that line too, like, do you think that's on the coach? I don't. Like, to me, the first period is, are they prepared? Did they play well? Are they going? I don't think the coach goes in the room and changes something. Like, that's on the players to come out and do what they did.
It's on the players, brother, but we all know who pays the price.
Oh, I know that.
You're not going to cut. You can't cut Dustin Byfuglien, for instance. Right? Like, you can't. You can try and make a big-time personnel move, or you can change what's at the top of the chain. We all know how it works in pro sports.
We got to take a break. We'll get to more of your calls when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Winnipeg Blue Bombers have signed international wide receiver Chris Givens to the practice roster. 6 feet, 203 out of Wake Forest. Played 4 years in the NFL after the St. Louis Rams drafted him in the fourth round of 2012. 60 career games in the NFL, most notably with the Baltimore Ravens in 2015, where he played in 12 games and started six. He was released by the Philadelphia Eagles before the start of the 2016 season. So, there's a new international receiver on the Blue Bombers practice roster. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line with Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 780-1290. Mo, you're on the program. Go ahead, Mo.
Hey, am I on here?
Yeah, Mo, you're on.
Hey, boys. I just wanted to call and say I think we're being a little too hard on our Jets right now. We're hitting the panic button. I mean, Troy, you're used to playing on pretty bad football teams. You guys hit the panic button in your preseason? I don't think so. Let's just pump the brakes and let these guys just figure things out. Do you think Buffalo's going to be giving her 110 in a preseason game? Let's just lay off them and let the coach get the systems instilled in these guys and just take it easy here, boys. I mean, this is just ridiculous. I think we're not making the playoffs because we lose a freaking preseason game.
I picked the Jets to miss the playoffs in the first place. And the thing with Dustin Byfuglien that's of concern is the making the mental mistakes that he did yesterday. And if I'm a part of this team, and the mantra of this team coming in is the new mindset, right? That was the thing coming in, the new mindset that this team has now arrived, and they're here to make some noise. I think it would be ridiculous to think that the veterans aren't out there. And I understand safety is important, but it's tough to play a game like hockey or any contact sport to play with being safe in mind, right? So you need to be out there still playing. And when you're talking about what these guys did in the first period to the degree that they were dominant and they come out and crap the bed in the second period, those little indicators that you get in preseason that are bad, not the positive ones, pull the reins back and just understand, okay, just take it easy, chakai chakai with things that are positive in preseason. But things that are negative and reflective of things that have haunted this team in past seasons, that is something to take note of.
You can stick
your head in the sand if you want.
I still have them making the playoffs despite their two preseason games and their 0-1-1 record.
I do too, but I can't say I feel more confident about it.
Thanks for the call, Mo. We'll get Steve in before we have to break on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Steve. Steve? Who's next? Anyone?
We will not have enough
time. Steve, that was your chance, man. Brings me back to my Steve Ivan story, the Chad Kruger Nickelback lookalike. Nickelback tonight at MTS, Bell MTS Place. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, and we appreciate all the calls and opinions, and we'll ask for more of them tomorrow's show. The afternoon ride today at 3 with Hustler and Rick Ralph will start and go till 6 in the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Mr. Kevin Olszewski and friends goes from 6 till 7. Puck drop live from Minneapolis, St. Paul to be precise, with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns goes at 7 o'clock tonight on TSN 1290, and the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you as well. Your thoughts on tonight's game and the roster? Eric Comrie, Connor Hellebuck will be the starting goalies. Jimmy Phillips is going, but he will just take in the experience.
Pile of guys to watch of great interest, right? A Tucker Pullman look as comfortable again tonight. Kyle Connor is going to have a whole lot more than his 3 minutes and 19 seconds left with 2 minutes and 35 seconds left in the second period. So expect Kyle Connor to get a pile of ice time. Let's hope that he sparkles and shines along with Brendan Lemieux and a host of other young players looking to make some noise tonight.
Yeah, Brendan Lemieux is an interesting one because can he replicate what he did on Monday night? And if he can, then the fourth line gets a little more interesting, the battle for it at least. But I think Kyle Connor's the one to watch tonight, especially because the Wild at home, they're going to have a much more different lineup than we saw a couple of nights ago here in the city. And I would have to assume that that Lowry unit's going to be the first line. So he's going to get plenty of minutes, and it's going to be up against some big dogs. And Minnesota's a very strong team defensively. So it'll be real, real good to see him have a pretty solid night for the Jets.
We'll break it all down for you on tomorrow morning's big show, and look for more of your calls, tweets, and opinions as well. Thanks for all the participation. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and the big show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.